Welcome aboard, everybody. This is the Starship Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, taking off for another day of special broadcasting with Brian Noonan today, sitting in for Rokan on this Friday.
It's good to be back. Nice to see you. I always like coming in. I like coming in with you any day, Anna, but Fridays are always fun.
Sort of special.
Yeah, we've got musical guests, Carnarble Wagon, a government shutdown looming. Yeah, it's a big day. Big day in broadcasting.
Big news day for sure, and we'll be following every minute of what's happening to try to keep you up to date on Congress trying to do its job and having trouble doing its job. The looming shutdown, of course, is there. Chuck Schumer gave some people some hope. I wasn't terribly optimistic, but he had a one-on-one with the president. The president invites him to the White House. 90-minute sit-down, says some progress.
Right. And I know Republicans were nervous that the president was going to make some big concessions by calling this one-on-one meeting. Only his chief of staff, the only other person in the room at the time. So we will see. But nothing's gotten done. We're at 7 hours, 48 minutes, and 19 seconds till the shutdown.
Seven hours, right, was the first number?
7 hours and 48 minutes.
Well, we will see as that clock ticks down if any progress is made and tell you about that. We're going to have Michael Steele, former head of the RNC, with us coming up here in just a few minutes. Then we're going to check in with ABC News. Also, you know, the WGN radio show here, the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, is growing, you may know, Brian. We've got two new puppies in our households.
I did know
Judy
that.
Has a puppy, and I just got a puppy.
Very nice.
So Steve Dale's going to come in and give us some puppy tips.
I have so many questions.
Oh, my gosh, I do, too.
Yeah, it's always Steve is a good font of information. I will text him occasionally if I have a dog question.
Too.
It's like, hey, this is going on with my dog.
Is
what do you think?
Is this normal?
Yes.
Do you ever take a picture of something, like you know, maybe what comes out of them and sends it to him? Or
not
you
that.
Keep that for the vet?
That I save for the vet. It's more behavioral. Like, hey, why is my dog digging 150 holes in the back? She's not a puppy anymore. What's going on? Because the backyard looks like a minefield.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Only puppies do that?
No, this is a 7-year-old dog.
Well, I'm saying, but my dog does that, so.
Oh, yeah.
But only puppies are supposed to do that.
Right. My dog's got issues. Some sort
my
of
question
mental
is,
issues.
When is a puppy no longer a puppy? She's only
That's a good question.
12 weeks, but
That's
I'm just wondering, when
You've
is
got a while.
Yeah.
Sorry, Anna.
I think two, maybe?
Earlier, I thought.
A year?
Yeah, I was surprised at how young they were considered not puppies anymore.
Well, that's the beauty of having Steven. He'll have the answer to that.
And
me,
your
I'm
questions,
just
too.
Off.
People should call in. We're going to take some phone calls and anything you want. Plus, there's that interesting story that Delta is no longer allowing certain therapy animals to be therapy animals. So, like, if you had a snake, for instance, that was your personal
Which I always look sideways at that. I have a ferret that's a therapy animal. I feel calmer when my ferret's running around in my pants. That seems weird.
And that one woman who had that very the pot-bellied pig she was carrying on her shoulder off of one of the flights, and everyone thought that was a little distracting, a little strange, but maybe Steve will have a different view and thinks they're very necessary. Well, we'll talk to him about these therapy animals that some of them are no longer allowed on certain airlines. Mike Ditka's going to join us.
I know, to previewing the playoffs and how he will talk to him about how, you know, his experience is getting ready for these big games and how you keep people focused and things like that.
You have a pick or a certain
team? No, it's, I know you're excited because of the false news about Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think it's false news.
Of course.
Mark Harmon, don't you think this is all a Bill Belichick just like trick or something?
Mental.
Yeah.
I think he actually is all of a sudden turned soft, Anna, and he doesn't really have the...
Wow, Carmen. Carmen always brings the hot takes.
Right?
That's what I love, the hot takes from Carmen.
Can't you see this one coming, Brian? All of a sudden, he gets a little scared of that Jaguar defense. Pretty good at shut down.
What
about the Jaguar quarterback? What's his name again?
That'd be Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles versus Tom Brady.
Right.
Brady versus... Bortle or Bortles?
Bortles.
Bortles.
And his old partner, James. They made a nice wine cooler before he started in football.
Yeah, Bortles and James.
Bortles and James.
I remember that.
Yeah. Just sit on a porch, throw passes to each other. It was nice.
I don't think Tom Brady's trembling.
I don't think so either. But
you know what? We all know that Bella cheats.
Yes. And this is... But
anytime I can say that, I do.
Bella cheats? Very nice. Very nice, Judy. Carmen, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the Patriots get in trouble a few years ago for not putting people on IR? So now they put everybody on the injury report just in case somebody may have a hangnail or something.
Yes.
It was a whole big thing.
It's a nonstop bending of the rules over there. One minute they're deflating footballs. The next minute they're filming teams while they're practicing. The next minute, it's an endless list, really.
And you know the excuse for all that? Dynasty.
No.
That's why.
Yeah. No, this would be Super Bowl number 6 for Tom, which I think we're all expecting to see happen, considering the matchup this week and the NFC kind of struggling.
But it'd be the first time if Minnesota makes it, which I kind of hope they do.
I do, too.
Minnesota makes it, it'd be home, right? They'd be playing at home.
Yeah.
First time a team would be doing that? Is that right?
Reasons for optimism if you're anti-New England, which I know you're not, Anna.
No, I do. I still want Tom Brady to win, but I want Minnesota to get there. So we'll talk to Mike Ditka, and then it's, of course, we've got the Canaveral wagon is rolling today.
Yes, we've got the lakefront, brand new place, the Lakefront Restaurant. Which is part of the new theater over there along the lake at Fullerton. So that's the chef Friedman
chef
is coming.
Chef Cletus is going to be here, and you're involved in theater. It's a wonderful theater. It's a wonderful theater though
on
the lake.
Theater.
You haven't been to it?
No, it's a great. I've driven by. It's a beautiful.
That was my first hot dog location.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Did they kick you out because you didn't want to?
No, but they had to do the turnaround and stuff. It was a small kiosk.
Okay.
So this will be fun.
Was it good business over there, though?
Yeah, really good.
Oh, sure.
I would think so. I think it really is. So he's going to be here to talk about this exciting new restaurant to be on our lakefront, and then the beatbox saxophonist.
Right. And Richard Roper is going to be here to
Richard
talk
Roper.
About movies.
How could I forget?
Man, we got a lot to get to.
We do. Why don't we take a break here, and on the other side, we're going to talk to Michael Steele about the latest from Washington, but let's get a look at what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in Judy's News. All right, we're talking about the looming government shutdown, and the talks in Congress right now are certainly among Senate Democrats and Republicans trying to avoid it, potentially. Let's find out. We're going to check in with Michael Steele right now, the former head of the RNC, one of our favorite people. And also, you can see him on the MSNBC. Michael.
What's up?
How are you this Friday?
I'm good, Anna. How you doing? You got Brian with you?
Hi, Michael. Good to see you. Good to talk to you again.
Hi. Yes, indeed. So my boy just couldn't take it. The shutdown was finally it.
That's, he had to leave the country.
Best. It's probably
he
best.
He had to leave the premises. He's like, you know what? That's it. Between the S-hole last week and the shutdown this week, I'm done.
Too much.
You should have seen the look on his face when the S-hole crossed while we were on the air. He's like, what? And he backed off of the microphone and he just... Ro couldn't handle it, so he's out of the country. I told him, hey, good idea if you just try to unplug, even if it's just an hour or two. You know, just try. It's probably best.
Wander into the jungle or something.
You got to.
You got to.
You have to. So that's why we have you, Michael Steele, to tell us what the chances are here, what we should expect this weekend. Because, you know, a government shutdown isn't good for anybody, is it? Nobody wants this.
It's not good for anybody. It's least of all good for Republicans. I appreciate very much the mantra to, you know, do the, you know, whole ship to the Democrats and the Schumer shutdown and all of the fancy rhetoric. But the fact of the matter is, more than 50% of the American people think that this is something that Republicans are responsible for. So we're gonna get probably suffer the largest wound on this politically.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good. It's not good from the standpoint of trying to build cooperation for more complicated things than this. I mean, there are bigger, more complicated things for this government to face. Besides the president's budget, and so I think we're sort of in a no man's land. So right now you're looking at probably a 60-40 chance the government will shut down in 11 hours.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, 7 hours.
7 hours and 40 minutes, according to the CNN countdown clock that everyone's been seeing.
Right.
You know, Democrats are still saying, "Hey, they're digging in on DACA. They want that, demand that to be part of this spending bill." And the Republicans are saying, "No, no, no. We've got till March 4th or 5th or whatever it is. We've got some time. Let's make that part of comprehensive immigration." That seems to be the primary sticking point. Is it fair to include DACA? Is that something Republicans should bend on here?
Now, you know, I think that the space and the will for DACA exists separate and apart from this budget fight. The Democrats are seeing the opportunity to leverage, and politically, I wouldn't blame them. That's what you do. But there does come a point, and I do believe, while I just said there's a 60-40 chance, I think that number will change, and I think it will change as a result of the hour-plus meeting the president had with Chuck Schumer this afternoon. To the point where we could get something that's pretty close to a clean CR to sort of get past this moment. Look, the president, by his own word and actions, created a 3-month window to March for the DACA issue to be dealt with. So DACA does not absolutely have to be dealt with, number one, right now. Number two, there is a growing consensus among Republicans and Democrats to do pretty much the same thing on DACA. And the beauty of that is it is a space that the president is going to be very comfortable with. So I think by itself, DACA is not going to be that difficult to do. The problem is this is the politics of 2018. This is not the politics of trying to solve the problem, but rather the politics of blame. Each party trying to position the other to be blamed for a government shutdown. And that, to me, is reprehensible.
Michael, when you heard that the president was calling Chuck Schumer in just for a one-on-one meeting, there were reports that some Republicans are a little worried that the president might concede some big issues. What was your thoughts when you heard about this meeting?
Fine. Let the president, if the president wants to negotiate with his fellow New Yorker, then that's what the president has the obligation to do. People were crying and moaning earlier today because the president wasn't on the phone and wasn't engaging votes on the other side. The Republicans are where they are. He needs 9 Democrats. Mm-hmm. All right. So Republicans are not in play at this point in the Senate. They made their move in the House. The Senate Democrats are the ones who control what happens here. So the natural thing for the president to do is what he did, to get in a room with Schumer and work out something. Now, okay, if that turns out something the Republicans don't like, then guess what? They're now on the hook to take their vote back off the table if Schumer is able to bring those 9 votes. And that, again, reinforces the idea that this government shutdown is more about blame.
Yeah.
Than it is a solution.
Yeah, I saw an ABC Washington Post separate polls actually saying that most people will blame Republicans and even blame the president above Democrats. There's one that just came out from CNN that actually said the reverse, that they'll say DACA is not worth a shutdown and more people blame Democrats. So if anybody thinks they're going to escape blame here, I think they're kidding themselves.
Right. Oh, exactly.
There's going to be enough to spread around.
That's exactly right. And then that's why you have the jockeying that you've had, trying to corner one or the other party in a way that the majority of whatever splatters up splatters on that party. So in the meantime, government services, government employees, government programs, the things that sort of impact people in a real way, tomorrow morning go offline. And it's not about just, oh, I can't get into the Yellowstone National Park. It's guess what? I won't have health insurance, or I won't get my check to pay for my expenses in next week. So
right.
there are a lot of things that are impacted here that are not recreational.
No, that's absolutely true. You think non-essential.
Everyone always focuses on that.
Right. I can't go to the Grand Canyon.
Oh, no.
Okay, I get it. Yellowstone, whatever. And that's tough. But at the end of the day, you have these so-called non-essential
right.
employees, and I hate that term. But some people are living paycheck to paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's look at the statistics in America. And there is a situation there where if they go 2 weeks without a solution, that's painful.
Right.
Every day you go without a solution when you're supposed to have a paycheck
right.
is painful, and it does impact millions of people. It's a real problem.
Now, Michael, this would be the fourth, if they do another short term, it'd be the fourth stopgap since October. What's it going to take to finally get the budget settled? Because this is, we can't keep going like this every couple months.
Well, we haven't had a budget passed by the United States Congress and signed by the president in, 15 years or so?
No big deal.
Right. Yeah, no big deal.
This is not that unusual. What is unusual is like, usually after one or two rounds on the CR circuit, they come to an agreement and they're done. So they do a continuing resolution until the next budget year, and then maybe next year we'll get it done. So the president submitted his budget in February of last year for this current fiscal year. This is what we're still fighting over.
Mm-hmm.
The president will submit a budget for the next fiscal year. This is how crazy this is. For the fiscal year that begins on October 1st of this year at the State of the Union, or shortly after the State of the Union, I should say,
mm-hmm.
In February. So this you know, this is a maddening circle that we're in, a vicious cycle of, you know, repeat rents, you know. it's just stupid.
Aye.
No way to do government.
No.
No way to do government. It's no way to actually serve the people. And it's why people have this sort of sourpuss view of government, because our leaders are wholly incompetent when it comes to the basic things that families and businesses do every day, and that is manage their money.
Right, and seem so terribly out of touch at times like this. Very quickly, I want to ask you, not because it's so important, because it's kind of fun to talk about, your take on the story that broke today about Omarosa, that she may have taped a bunch, yes, of her phone conversations in the White House, and how this may or may not play some role in the Mueller investigation. Did you see that, Michael Steele?
I did, and that is both concerning for the White House for sure, but it's also problematic for Omarosa, as I think that has to be cleared. D.C. law, which, yes, the White House is still subject to, you cannot tape someone without their knowledge. So, and even if you're in that bubble, you get the kinds of permissions and meet the kinds of requirements that you're supposed to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you did that. So that could be a whole kind of ugly mess coming up. And again, for Omarosa, it's more drama. It's more all about me.
Mm-hmm. But she seems to love the drama.
Oh, yeah. Right.
She follows her everywhere.
Yeah. it's what it's all about. I think we just take it all with a grain of salt, and the legal authorities should come down like a hammer, because they have on others in the past who've done similar things. So I just think this will be a very interesting part of the fantasy fairy tale that we'll have to watch.
We'll be watching. Michael Steele, thank you so much. You have a good Friday and a good weekend as well.
All right, you too.
Take
you
care, Michael.
Good talking with you.
All right, take care.
Take care.
We're going to check in with Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes.
Time is on my side. Yes, it is.
Oh, I don't think so.
It's not on Washington's side, that's for sure.
Nope. We're at 7 hours, 19 minutes, 50 seconds.
Midnight tonight. Right. If there is no funding bill that they'll get enough support in the Senate, that'll draw enough support in the Senate, they will shut down the government, which has real consequences and is obviously not the outcome most people would vote for,
no,
given a choice to vote. We're going to check in with ABC News correspondent on Capitol Hill, Lana Zak. And Lana, we just want to thank you for one thing and up front, that yesterday our listeners had a lot of questions about would Social Security still be paid and that kind of thing, and you went out of your way to call us back afterwards, and thank you for that, because that clarity is important. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I heard from the Social Security Administrator just about an hour or two ago, and they feel confident that they are going to have their contingency plans in place so that they will be able to continue to get those checks out to people in the course of a shutdown, which, as you mentioned, is just about 7 hours away now.
Yeah. Gee, so you're talking about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all those types of programs are still, they're not... they're not in part of the appropriations process. So the checks get cut. It's just we were worried about, are there enough employees to cut those?
To actually get those distributed to people. Exactly, yeah. Right. So the money exists, and then the question just becomes, when they are furloughing their workers, are they going to be able to keep up with that actual logistical step? Because that's important to actually get those checks off to people, and they have assured me that they feel like they have taken the necessary precautions. They're actually going to have about 50,000 of their 65,000 55,000 of their 65,000 employees are going to continue working even if there is a government shutdown.
Okay. Well, that's pretty good. Breaking news now, or in the last few minutes, a second Democratic senator has said that they will vote yes on the spending bill. Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly has said that keeping the government running is our job, and I will vote to keep the government running. So there's two Democratic senators who say they're going to vote for this. Are you starting to hear rumblings that, you know, more may fall in?
Potentially. And And part of what happened, the big happening today, was really that olive branch that was extended and accepted between President Trump and the minority Senate leader, Chuck Schumer. The two men meeting at the White House for about an hour with only those two and their chiefs of staff present. Schumer, when he arrived back here at the Capitol, said that there was progress made. They talked about all the issues in which they had disagreements and that there are still some disagreements out there, but that they were going to continue to have discussions. He wouldn't answer our questions, however, about whether or not he thought there would be a shutdown tonight. But it is more optimistic, perhaps, than it was earlier today. Mm-hmm.
Did you get any sense about where the movement was? I know the initial reports when Schumer came out, he just said, you know, some progress has been made, but we still have, you know, some it seemed like some substantive issues to hammer out. It felt to me as if the Democrats all along really wanted some kind of DACA protection in order to sign on to this funding bill, and that seemed to be a general concern, the biggest concern. Was there movement on that, or is that still not an area that Republicans are willing to budge and the president's willing to budge on?
That's still not clear yet, and there may be a very strategic reason why they are keeping that close to the vest. Remember, as soon as details start to emerge, then the president's going to start hearing from perhaps more conservative members of his party that don't want to make any concessions on DACA. And so right now, they're keeping it very quiet here in the Capitol, as well as over at the White House. Both sides just sort of keeping mum, and it seems like the greatest possibility to avoid a shutdown at this point would be, in fact, that continuing resolution, that they would pass a continuing resolution feeling like there's enough goodwill and enough of a promise that they would get a permanent agreement on the legal status of those DACA recipients that would allow them to do it. But remember, we're talking about a matter of hours now. Mm-hmm. It's very unlikely that they're actually going to be able to get that legislation passed by both houses in advance of the deadline. So the best option might in fact be that continuing resolution.
Yeah, you even saw some of the Republican leadership today say it would take longer than the amount of hours we have left in the day to draft that mm-hmm. sort of a document
right.
at this point. I mean,
I think that was McConnell speaking over in the Senate this morning, mm-hmm. who was really pointedly blaming Democrats for this potential shutdown. Democrats in turn blaming Republicans, and according to the latest public opinion polls, the majority of Americans seem to either they are blaming Republicans more than they're blaming Democrats, but a lot of people are blaming both parties on this one.
Yeah, and then a CNN poll said that more people in their poll are blaming the Democrats, not by much, but more right. are. Some are blaming the president straight up. It's nonstop. Twitter has been buzz all day from both sides, mm-hmm. blaming the other. The hashtag Schumer shutdown is starting. You know, they're wasting a lot of time blaming each other when they should just be sitting down trying to work this out.
Yeah, the CNN.
Well, it seems like the people. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Anna.
I just wanted to fill in the data there because I actually just saw it just now. The CNN poll says 56% say they don't think it's a good idea to shut down the government to save DACA. So when they isolate those people and say, hey, is it worth it to try to get DACA? People are saying no, they'd rather, you know, wait for it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's all part of a robust discussion. And to your point, Brian, it seems like the people who are, at least after this meeting between the president and Schumer, the people who are still really firing and pointing fingers right now are the people who are not involved in the negotiations. Those folks are actually sort of holding their fire right now, trying to tread lightly, hoping not to blow up any potential for an agreement. So there is some level of goodwill that we're seeing here at the Capitol.
And, you know, it's interesting that the president did call Schumer himself just to come in for a one-on-one. I know there's some staffers present and that kind of thing, but Mitch McConnell wasn't there. It was more of a, we need Democrat votes. What can we do? Mm-hmm. And the two of them have a mm-hmm. longstanding history, both New Yorkers. He's contributed a lot to Chuck Schumer's campaigns
right.
in the past and
right.
considered him a friend, I guess, at one point. And then he said, now we don't agree on him much because one's a Democrat, one's a Republican. Sure. He liked him when he was a Democrat.
Of course he did.
Donald Trump. But he doesn't, you know, they don't see as much eye to eye now. Does it feel as if that wasn't just about optics, right? That meeting, you feel there was something substantial that came out of it?
Absolutely. And I think we have good reason to believe that, in part just because of the silence that has been kept on the part of Schumer and since he's been back here at the Capitol, Pelosi, who he's met with, Dick Durbin, all of them have not been criticizing the president. They've been trying to figure out a deal and how to make this work so that their members are getting the best guidance in terms of how to avoid a government shutdown. So like I said, there is some cautious optimism. There is some goodwill. But again, we are just hours away from this, and the votes as of now are not there.
Now, they're saying that they're willing to work around the clock, which is fine. So if they don't meet the deadline, which it doesn't look like they can, they get it done over the weekend. How much of an impact will there be if the government technically shut down for Saturday and Sunday? We know contingency plans are in place. The federal courts are saying they can go for a few weeks. Everything seems to be okay. Would a 1 or 2 day shutdown be as damaging as a longer one?
The shorter the shutdown, the better. In shutdowns past, the ones that are longer tend to cost the United States government, lost potential for economic activity, not to mention the headache and the disaster that it creates for people who are reliant on the federal government for services that are deemed non-essential. So as much as this can be taken care of as quickly as possible, I think is what the American people should be rooting for.
Yeah, I'll say. I mean, it's in all of our best interests. We'd like to see it. The last one, it was, what, 16, 17 days, and they say, you know, $24 billion in economic output based on, you know, what happens when right. things come to a standstill, ultimately, and people aren't working, and you put your paycheck on hold, you really don't spend that much, right?
No, definitely not. If you don't have money coming in, you can't have money going
it's
out.
It's pretty hard to do, I think. So,
and there's also an international aspect to this as well that maybe lesser in the minds of folks, but the president is getting ready to meet with British Prime Minister Theresa May. Vice President Pence is about to travel abroad, so is Secretary Mattis. And the United States, when it sounds like we can't get our act together to fund our government, we don't look like we are the sterling example for democracy for the rest of the world.
Who's going to listen to you if you don't have your own house in order? You can't tell. Don't tell me what to do if you can't even tend to your own business.
It's like isn't that the core responsibility of a member of Congress? This is their job, right? Yes. This is keeping the government functioning. So we're going to hope for the very best, Lana, and we certainly appreciate your update.
And thank you again for checking back in yesterday and clarifying that Social Security question.
Absolutely. It's always my pleasure to talk to you.
Take care, Lana. That's Lana Zak. She is on Capitol Hill keeping an eye on. What are we? What's the time? What are we at?
We've got to check in with Judy to see what's coming up in her news coming up at the top of the hour. This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Brian Noonan is in on this Friday with us.
Yes, ma'am.
And it could be a very eventful Friday. We want to let everyone know we're going to keep you, no matter what we're talking about. Judy will keep you posted on the latest on the shutdown. What if it happens? If they reach an agreement, we'll tell you about
anything
that, too.
Anything that breaks, we will let you know.
Seems like there's a development, which we
7 hours,
certainly
five
hope
minutes.
For. 7 hours, 5 minutes.
And people are saying, okay, we got a text from somebody. You know what it means to me, to this texter and some other people? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Because most of us will not really be affected. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're counting on your Social Security check, well, that money's still going to come.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to go to the VA, they're still going to be up and running. Everything's going to be fine at the VA. So a lot of us won't be affected immediately. But down the road, things start to happen.
Well, it comes down to they've got the essential and non-essential employees. Mm-hmm. So if you're considered non-essential, again, I hate that word.
I do too.
I mean, all of us, I guess, are non-essential.
Sure.
I mean,
if you look at it, who's really essential?
Right. So, but whatever, they will have to stay home. Some of them won't even be allowed to show up, even if they have a lot of work to do.
And they do get paid, but it's back end.
Retroactively.
Right.
So it depends on how long it lasts.
Exactly.
If it lasts, if you're an essential employee, you also will continue to work, and then they'll pay you retroactively.
We'll pay you later.
Your mail's still going to come. The border's still going to be patrolled. The military essential employees
still working.
Report
work
for the security.
Courts will be open. Federal court will be open. Local courts. The district court judge here in Chicago said they can go through the first week of February. They're pretty much set up. So that's a couple weeks, if worse came to worse.
National parks, as you say, some of them might have limited access, but still be open. They wouldn't pick up the trash in some cases, and those people are considered non-essential. And
the people who clean the full-service bathrooms would be closed. They're not going to plow roads into some of the parks. So if you're trying to go, I don't know, Grand Canyon or some snow-laden national park, you're going to be out of luck.
One of the things that's interesting is the capital. I mean, you think about Chicago, if you work for the government or you have a direct connection in some way, yes, you're affected. I know people who work for the government. They are going to be impacted.
Right. If you work for the government, you're definitely
you're
feeling
gonna
it.
You're going to feel it. But if you think about the capital in D.C., it's going to be a relative ghost town if you have a shutdown. And so that's almost sort of a message to lawmakers, I would think. Get your act together. Figure this out.
Well, and you look, then the trickle down. All right, if I'm a government worker, and you mentioned this before, and I'm not getting paid till, I don't know, whenever this shutdown ends, I'm not buying anything new. I'm not going out to dinner.
You're not spending, are you? I mean, I wouldn't. If you think, okay, I don't know, you probably don't know. Could get done in 24 hours by the end of the weekend or whatever, but
maybe.
You don't know.
Right.
So it's a difficult thing to plan for your family when you really just don't know. Also, that chip, which became... Some say a bargaining chip. Some say it just became part of the talks in order to bring everyone to the table to try to get this passed.
Yeah, and that seemed like a bipartisan thing because no party wants to be the one that's against children.
Children's health care and that kind of thing. But they do say by Friday, some of those states that will run out of money for that program. So that is one of the programs that would be deeply impacted. And those are largely lower income people who are relying on that program. So
I know if you're one of these people who think they might be furloughed, you are watching this as close as anybody.
I thrive on being a non-essential employee.
Well, that is, Carm, I love you, but I've said it about you countless times.
I know.
And it's actually on my business card, non-essential employee.
Right?
Yeah.
It's where I feel comfortable.
Exactly. Because there's no pressure.
Right.
What are they going to do? Fire me? I'm not essential.
Furlough
me. Whatever. Whatever happens, happens.
I'm here. I'm not here.
You don't want to be essential, Mark? That's not your dream?
I mean, I didn't say I didn't want to be, but I just you got to know where you're at in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to thrive.
A man's got to know his limitations.
Exactly.
Okay. I like that.
Very nice.
All right, well, we're going to be thriving, and we will bring you the essential news, or Judy will, at the top of the hour, coming up in 2 minutes.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes. I'm Brian Noonan for Ro today. Anna is keeping things on a nice stable track, which is always good.
For a Friday, we like to be kind of stable until we're not.
And we are keeping an eye on the news. 6 hours, 50 minutes till the potential government shutdown. Judy is working hard. She will jump in if anything breaks, so you don't need to worry about that. I've been watching Anna for the last 2 days and listening to her, and one of your eyes is all.
Everyone said I came in yesterday. It's all reds, and then I thought, well, we just got a new puppy. I wondered if it could be connected because I'm touching the puppy, and the puppy goes to the bathroom, and you pick up the puppy. And
exactly.
So you have
a puppy. Judy's got a puppy.
Judy just got a puppy, and so we've got two new puppies. And the best person to ask about anything in this entire area is Steve Dale. Host of Steve Dale's Pet World Sundays here on WGN, you know that. But Steve, help us out. I got this eye infection. Is it potentially related?
Absolutely potentially related. I know. My microphone here isn't working.
Well, you're on. That microphone is on.
Yeah, but I'm not. So let me
hop over there. I just thought it was strange.
I'm, if nothing else, nimble. So
there you
it's
go.
No problem.
For some reason, mic 3, Brian, not working.
Yeah, they heard. Mic 3 heard I was coming in, and that clearly is what happened.
Steve broke it.
Yes.
Thank you. So busy jetting back and forth from tropical locales that he broke the microphone.
What can you do for Anna? What can I do for Anna? Not much.
No,
but
you
can't. I just have
to live with it and deal with it.
Yes.
It'll get better. I just didn't even realize that it's possible.
You know, so dogs actually share so much of our DNA, and we don't think about it this way, but. So much of what they can get, we can get.
Mm-hmm.
One example, and not necessarily from the dog or the other way around, most cancers. So most kinds of cancers that people can get, of course, we don't get cancers from other people either, but most kinds of cancers that people can get, dogs can get, and vice versa. So many of the illnesses that dogs have, we share.
Well, like
them.
The dog flu, which is an outbreak in California.
Yeah, great point. So the canine influenza virus, it's still here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And in Chicago, it's endemic, which means it lives here.
Oh, wow.
How many years? It seems like we've been talking about this for the last couple of years, right?
There are two strains of dog flu, H3N8, H3N2. H3N2 is the one you're referring to, though they both live in Chicago. So if I'm a Chicagoan and I have a dog and it's a social dog, talk to your veterinarian about this. But I'm thinking, yes, I am vaccinating my dog. Now, the good news is because a certain percent of people have vaccinated, and because, sadly, a certain number of dogs have built up some immunity, they've gotten sick, and just good luck, we've not had an outbreak of dog flu happening in Chicago, per se. But veterinarians absolutely do see it. Because there's no outbreak, it's not been in the news, it's not front and center, but it's there. And when you talk to veterinarians, in most places around the Chicago area, they will say, yeah, I don't see it every day, but I do see it. However, now in California, in San Jose and all those cities with those names,
right,
San
around
something around there, they are seeing hundreds and hundreds, if not a thousand or more dogs have gotten sick as a result of dog flu. Now, the good news is most dogs, just like with people, most dogs recover. Having said that, 2 to 5% of them do not.
Ugh.
And if that 2 to 5% is your dog, and the numbers are staggering. So I figured out, and I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head because there is so little in my head, but approximately in 2016, if you consider that over 50,000 dogs did get the flu and more or less, that's about
right
as a guesstimate, and then do, well, 2 or 3 to 5% of that, that's too many dogs that passed away. Yeah.
So besides keeping your dog at home and making them antisocial, keeping them away from other dogs, there are vaccines, as you said, but kind of isolating your dog is the best way to prevent this, right?
Well,
or taking them, you don't take them for your own walk. You don't let them play with other dogs.
Here's the crazy thing about the dog flu, and I can't speak to the human flu virus going around now, but I can talk about the dog flu. So about 20% of the dogs, here's the great news, they don't get sick.
Okay.
But
that means 80% do, though, Steve.
Well, no. Even 100% do. So dogs, unless a dog is vaccinated to H3N2, or unless a dog just got over H3N2, in other words, just had the flu within the past couple of months, there is no immunity because this flu is completely novel to America. So nearly 100% of the dogs will get it. About 80% actually get sick, which means 20% of the dogs, if you're following my bouncing ball.
I need a whiteboard or something to chart this out.
20%. I didn't know we had to do math on
really? 20%.
Talk about puppies. Now we got math, I guess. If a train leaves with a dog on it and it's 80% full and it runs into a flu cloud, what are you talking about?
Give me an answer. All right, I'll do it again.
No, don't start again.
So dogs are walking around that are carrying the bug.
Right.
They're asymptomatic. Okay. Their owners have no way to know their dog is actually carrying the flu, and they are spreading it to other dogs. And that's what makes this dog flu one of the things that makes it very, very difficult to stop, except to vaccinate.
Yeah. But what other things are there any that we should be worry of that you can actually give to your dog and you can get from your dog? Are there anything?
Well, what you've got, you know, conjunctivitis is one thing.
Dog eye.
Yeah.
That's what I like to call it.
Yeah. But not too many that go back and forth that are truly zoonotic like that. There are lots of things that we can get that they get.
Right.
A big one are tick diseases, which incidentally on days like today, so it's warmed up a little bit, we don't think ticks are in the big city, but they really are.
Even after it being so cold?
Yeah.
We didn't freeze them all off?
No.
Well, I know both Anna and Judy have more more puppy questions.
And we want to take your questions as well. So
mine?
Well, not yours.
Yes.
You know everything on this subject.
Well, oh, I had no idea.
You're the guy who's going to answer the questions, Steve Dale.
Oh, 312-981-7200 if you have a question for Steve.
Well, before we get to Steve and your questions, we're going to check in with Judy Pilek and see what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in her news.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago. That's at 10:30 p.m. WGN-TV.
We're taking your questions for Steve Dale and your pets. Judy and I recently got puppies, and we've just been talking about all the questions we have for Steve Dale. Look, a quick question. May I ask you about dog food? Because it's been about 8 years since I've had a dog. And when I went into the pet store recently, I was amazed by how that area has changed, both it's in the, how expensive it's gotten, but also how crazy detail it's gotten. And I just wonder, like, there was like these whole grain organic mm-hmm. kale infused kibble bits or something, and there's
limited
all,
ingredients.
Yeah, I mean, and just it's wow, the choices, and it's a little overwhelming. What do the dogs really need? I mean, what do you need?
It's a lot overwhelming, and I will tell you, a lot of it is marketing. So dog food has become a religion mm-hmm. to people.
Yes.
And on the internet, people feel so strongly, so strongly about mm-hmm. dog food that I want and will only buy X. And they feel particularly passionate about, I don't want to get into, well, I
well,
guess
if it
I
works
begin.
For them, I get it.
Just- yeah. But the raw food is the thing, you know, and it concerns me to tell you the truth, because I don't personally believe that's necessarily the right thing. And I will tell you, when we watch the television commercials, and I'm going to be talking about this. I mean, this is the soapbox I will be on in 2018.
Nice.
Talking about... you see these commercials and you see a wolf, and then you see...
Yes, my dog is a wolf. It's got wolf in it.
But your dog is not a wolf.
That's what they tell me, Steve. I buy the food because I want a wolf.
But that's not right.
No.
Oh.
And in fact, too long to tell now, but dogs developed around the same time as the Eastern gray wolf. So dogs did evolve from wolves, but it's a species that's long gone off the planet.
So they don't need raw food?
No.
All right.
In a word.
And are you saying that any of the bagged food at the store is okay? There's really not that much difference?
No. At the end of the day, there are a couple things. First of all, what your dog does well on, Anna or mm-hmm. Brian, one of you said that, mm-hmm. that works. Okay. So if it works for your dog, even if it's the inexpensive food, your dog can live to the age of 20. Having said that, it's like everything else in the world, generally speaking, you get what you pay for, you know, to some extent.
Okay.
Should you look for things that have like meat as the first few ingredients rather than grains? You know, the grains can come in later down the ingredient list, but do you want something that says chicken or beef or something right up front?
So what we haven't been able to get the Food and Drug Department, FDA, Food and Drug
Administration,
thank you, to do is to list, like in human foods, the exact percent of everything that's on there. But would consumers know what that means necessarily for our pets?
No. Nah.
And I'm not sure that they would.
Probably
I will tell you, and you know this, Brian, by the way you asked the question, that everything on a label is an order of how much is there. So the thing you see at the top of the label, if it is chicken or beef or lamb, and you might want to see meat, if not at the top, very much toward the top for sure, that's the thing that is most in the food. And then at the very bottom, you see these minerals, or you might see kale or blueberry or some other things that
yes,
are certainly...
Yes, you do see that. Yeah. I was amazed.
Yeah.
It's like going to Whole Foods.
And
you're going to the pet store.
Yeah, and they're good for our pets. Is there enough kale or blueberry in that pet food to really matter?
Or is it more marketing?
And you have vitamin... D or whatever in there, or whatever was a what is kale vitamin? I forget. I'm not a nutritionist, but whatever that vitamin is, you will see that in the food anyway, supplemented. But they put a little extra kale in there for, as Anna just said,
marketing.
Now Judy has been feeding her puppy pastrami sandwiches. That's what I was told.
No, so, but I have just given him peanut butter. Is that okay?
Yes. So let me...
Peanut butter,
I've been on the internet. Peanut butter and little chopped up pieces of banana in his little Kong.
Look at that, Julie.
So,
I'm
you
a
have,
good mom.
And
now,
that's okay
mom,
for a puppy?
Yes. So, Mom, you have two little Kongs. With one caveat, I'll explain in a second. So, Mom, you have two little Kongs.
Yes,
now, because I brought
that's
you
what
one,
I put it in.
And I brought you one, Anna.
Oh, beautiful!
Steve.
And
awesome.
That.
Free pet swag.
That's nice.
That's
ding, 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 ding.
That's right.
That's exactly what I put it in.
But I love, love, love Kong toys and similar kinds of toys that offer occupational therapy, if you will, for your dog or your cat, for that matter, when you're not home. Things for the pet to do when you're not there, they're less likely to get into trouble. We also know that it is good for them in a whole lot of ways. Trust me, I just don't have time to describe those ways at the moment. Now, about peanut butter. Yes, peanut butter is fine. I would prefer the low salt, no sugar peanut butter for our pets, probably for us too. But for pets, then, okay, you're going no sugar. Then in a lot of the natural brands, you see a sugar substitute called xylitol. Xylitol is actually really dangerous for pets.
Oh.
Exceedingly dangerous. So if there is a peanut butter that you're using that has xylitol in it, That is a problem.
Look for that. Stop. Isn't that where they put in gum so your breath smells fresh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't care if my dog's breath
is
fresh.
They never are. No. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that.
Gum, toothpaste, the brownies, cookies as a sugar substitute.
Anna was asking earlier, and Judy too, when does a dog cease to be a puppy? At what age do they become like a teenage brat
dog?
Mine
is almost 12 weeks, so I'm not
nowhere near
it.
When can they start dating? That's what we want to know.
When can you kick them out and tell them to get a job?
Well, if it's Judy's dog, probably the dog can start dating yesterday.
Like mother, like doggy. Wow.
I don't even know what that meant.
I don't either.
Okay. I don't know.
All I know is Judy left that newsroom seat like bat out of hell. I think she's on her way down.
Yeah, and Judy can whip me, so I better be careful. So it depends on the kind of dog we're talking about. A little toy dog will age differently, including turning from puppies into dogs. And there is no magical age, but do it at a different rate. So a very large breed like a Newfoundland or a St. Bernard, we're talking probably around 24 months.
Okay.
And if we're talking about a smaller dog, we're talking about a less period of time, maybe 10 months or so.
Oh, okay.
One definition, though, is when the dog of that particular breed or mix can reach sexual maturity. But hopefully we're spaying and neutering, so it doesn't much matter.
I'm just interested in potty training. When is that typically done? That's the
now.
Most important.
Now.
Done. When do they figure it out?
When do they have
it depends on the individual dog, and it depends how good and consistent you are.
We're being pretty consistent.
You know what? We want a number.
Yeah, wow. I know. Let's
Judy,
nail this
down,
please.
Come on.
Just give them a number,
Steve.
We
got two news
people around the bush.
3 hours and 21 minutes from now.
Oh, stop.
Guaranteed.
Steve, that's not right. I mean, isn't that 6 months? Well, when do you have a problem if they're not
So what? Trained? I will say this. What typically happens is you think they're potty trained, and they are
Surprise.
For a week or two, and then you have several weeks, if not a month, of kind of went backwards a little while, and there's no explanation for it. It's very common. It depends on the dog, the type of dog you have, and how consistent you are. So for very small dogs, it takes more time because they have less bladder control,
and it takes
more time for them to develop that bladder control. For larger dogs, it can go more quickly. Having said that, larger dogs mature more slowly. So a lot of it truly depends on the individual dog and how good you are, how consistent.
So it's all your fault.
How consistent the entire family is.
Now, speaking of puppies, Lori has a puppy question for Steve. Hello, Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a Newfoundland puppy. He's 6 months old. I have two older dogs, and as long as he is interacting with the other dogs and or me, he's fine. But the minute they don't want to play with him anymore, he gets bored, and then he starts chewing and tearing things up. What toy or treat or what can I give him to occupy him?
Great question.
It is a good question, and the ones that I just talked about would be perfect. Kong toys, KONG, but there are a whole assortment of toys now that are safe, reasonably safe. You still have to be there because there's no toy that is absolutely safe for every dog on the planet. I mean, even the oldest toy on the books might be a tennis ball, and there are some dogs that have swallowed those, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to be there, especially at the beginning, with a puppy, to observe what's going on. But generally, Kong toys are very, very safe. As Judy does, you stuff something inside the toy that'll occupy the dog. So if there's peanut butter inside that toy, your dog's not going to be bored destroying other things in the house.
Would that help with the digging?
Yes.
So if I get a couple Kongs and
digging
fill them with
outside,
peanut butter,
right?
Yes, this dog digs everywhere. On my bed, outside. Under the house.
In your bed.
That means
everywhere.
They're bored? Is that what they're telling you?
Right. Yes, sometimes. But dogs, you know, especially if a dog has a terrier, some terrier in it. I mean, they were bred
born
to do
dig.
That.
Yeah.
Somebody on staff wanted me to ask you this question.
Or it might be something they're digging for. You know, I mean, I've gotten so many letters over
no
the years.
There is no treasure in my yard.
Did he bury something?
It.
Maybe the dog buried something. You don't know about it.
And then waited patiently for 6 years to finally decide to start digging it up. Somebody on staff wanted me to ask you this. They have a dog who gets very, very excited when they come home, as most dogs do.
Sure.
And the dog is jumping up on them. And they want to know what they can do to keep that dog at bay, short of like a punch to the head.
No,
I know that's what I'm saying. You don't want to punch the dog. Nobody punches a dog.
No, no, no. Withdraw attention. So the dog, you walk in the house, the dog is happy to see you, perfectly natural to do. If the dog is being a bit, in your definition, over exuberant, like jumping up into the sky, then ignore the dog. What does the dog want? The dog only wants your attention, of course. So withdraw that attention.
So you shun them.
You shun them.
Oh.
You can literally turn your back.
What is more heartless?
Eventually,
punch him in the head or shunning
him? No!
Knows I'm kidding because I love dogs.
Eventually, the dog will calm down.
Remind us something else, Steve, because we're going to break here, but we've had very cold weather here. Remind us what the temperature is when you're saying, hey, the dogs should not be outside anymore. They can't handle it. Because we do hear stories all the time of people leaving them out in the cold, and it breaks my heart because come on.
Yeah, I want to work on a law. Actually, Pennsylvania now has a law that you can't leave the dog outside. There is no necessarily magic temperature for all dogs because a Malamute was born to be out in 30-degree weather, 20-degree weather. That's no problem. But for a little Chihuahua, that is a problem. So it really depends on the kind of dog you have. But definitely, if you have a sighthound, sighthounds are greyhounds, Salukis, Whippets.
Oh, they're really skinny.
And they have very little body fat, for which I am jealous. But they have no way to keep themselves warm as a result. No way, no way, no way.
Right.
So for those dogs, if it's below even 45 degrees, I say put a jacket or a coat or a sweater on those dogs. For the small toy dogs, about the same temperature, I'm talking about the very, very small dogs, they have no way physiologically to retain body heat.
Right.
As we get a little larger, like pit bulls can get very, very cold, you know, when it's in the 20s
or
teens. So it really depends on the kind of dog we're talking about. Use common sense. It's really important because dogs can get frostbite.
Yeah. All right.
It's always good to talk to you, Steve.
Steve, answering a lot of questions.
I didn't answer enough of them.
Well, there's so many. There are so many under this umbrella.
People can talk to you Sunday morning at 6:30.
Oh, you know what?
What?
No, this is so exciting.
What happened?
So as it happens, you called me asking about puppies, right?
Yes, we did.
And I just began, really, a series of videos, what do you do with a puppy?
Cool.
And the first is house training, and you can find all these videos at stevedale.tv. And
perfect.
That, of course,
we'll
is my
out.
Website.
Yeah. All right, Steve, we've got Mike Ditka coming up after the break.
What?
Judy's News. Yeah, stick around for that, but Judy's News in 2 minutes. This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We've got Brian Noonan in the studio. We've got Mark Carmen in the studio, too, because Mike Ditka is going to be checking in with us.
Look at
quick
that.
Note though first.
The king of the hot takes.
Tweet from the president within the last 20 minutes. Excellent preliminary meeting in Oval Office with Senator Schumer, he says, working on solutions for security and our great military together with the Senate Majority Leader and Speaker Ryan. Making progress. 4-week extension might be best or would be best, he says. So last-ditch efforts are underway to avoid a shutdown, and we'll continue to keep you posted on details.
Yeah, very good. And 6 hours, 19 minutes.
That's how long they have.
That's how long they have.
Midnight tonight.
Well, Carm, we're into the league championship games, AFC, NFC championships this weekend, and a man who's been there before joins us now, Coach Mike Ditka. Hey, Coach, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We are well. Welcome. You've been in this situation before. What's it like for these coaches preparing these teams? You know, because as much as they say, oh, it's just another game, you got to play every game the same, it's not really the same game, is it? There's a lot more riding on these games this weekend.
Well, yeah, there's a lot more riding on it, but you don't know that. When you're preparing for all your games, you don't know what the outcome's going to be. If you don't win the game in the sixth or seventh or eighth week, you won't be there at all. So you get into the playoffs. So now you're in the playoffs. Every game is important. But I always said if it's not broken, don't fix it. In other words, why would you change what you're doing? If you do it well and you're having success, why would you change it? Now, you might take the film and break down something the other team's doing. You might put a couple of things in for maybe the way they're playing their defense or what their safeties do, if they're tipping a defense. But other than that, you're not going to change anything. You know, you got to dance with the one you brought.
I love it. Dance with the one that brought you. Do you have any picks? You look at this weekend, Coach. We've got the Jaguars facing the Patriots and then the Vikings and the Eagles. Coach, you there?
Well, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we thought we lost you there. What do you think is going to shake out there?
Well, the best team and the best organization in football are New England Patriots.
Yep.
I'm tremendously impressed, and I understand Jacksonville can play good. I mean, I understand all that. I just say the Patriots are, to me, their organization, top to bottom, coaching, quarterbacking, they got a lot of players. The Minnesota team I like a lot. I like what they're doing. Case Keenum's done a good job. They can run the football. They play pretty darn good defense. But then again, you know, anything can happen in a football game. You watched some of those games over the weekend. I mean, it was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so Minnesota
was crazy.
Oh, that was nuts.
Yeah. Minnesota game was absolutely crazy.
So that's what I mean. If the ball bounces the wrong way, something could happen. But they've done a good job up in Minnesota coaching, and they think they're a solid football team, and they're not going to score 50 points, but they got a good solid football team. So it ought to be interesting. If I was, I'm not a betting man,
nope.
And I never bet, but I mean,
if you were,
I think it's, the Super Bowl is in Minnesota, so I think Minnesota's going to get there and they're going to play New England. I don't know what that.
Coach, you're familiar with having a starting quarterback all season and then not having him in the playoffs. That happened a couple times with good old number 9. And Philly is 13-3 because of Carson Wentz, but he's not playing. So you got Nick Foles. I mean, and he played all right last week. But is that the main reason why you like the Vikings this week? Because they are playing with their backup quarterback?
No, I not really. And I think it's going to be a good game. Nick Foles, come on. He's a quarterback. He's been around for a long time. The coaches aren't going to put him in a position that's uncomfortable for him. They're going to try to do the things they do. They've got a nice passing game. They've pretty good, solid offensive line. They can run the football. But, when you look at the playoffs, and you hate to say, well, it's all about the defense. Well, if you can stop the other team's offense, you got a very good chance of winning the football game. I right now, I don't see anybody stopping the Patriots, but if they stop them, there's no question they got a very good chance of winning the game. That organization has done everything right. But, I like what they've done up in Minnesota, too. I really do. I think they and they're playing at home. And actually, they're playing in Philadelphia, I guess, aren't they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're playing in Philadelphia. But the Super Bowl's in Minnesota.
That's right. They'd be the first team to play the Super Bowl in their home stadium.
Yeah, that would be something. And I think that's kind of on the back of their mind, but right now the main thing on their minds are the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
So, Coach, when you're in a game like this in the playoffs, you've got veterans who've been there before. They know how to handle it. When you've got some new guys on your team, they're going to be a little more jumpy. What do you say to those guys the night before the game, the week leading up to the game, and just before to kind of calm their nerves or focus them a little better?
Well, these guys have got to where they got in football. By the way, they played in high school, college, and pro football. So, you can't say, we're going to change this. We're going to change the game plan. I was in Dallas one year. We went to the Super Bowl, and we had been having a lot of success running, doing certain things. And Coach Landry kind of got spooked. And he said, we're going to change this and this and this. We changed about 8 things. And
that seems like a lot.
Very close game. Yeah, we got beat in a close game. It wasn't really... But, you do what you know how to do. You do what you do best. And if the other team's going to stop you, they're going to stop you. They'll be a better football team. But don't stray away from what you do best. If you play the running game is your bread and butter, then take the running game. It's passing game, go with that. But I think the key to this, whatever team can play the best defense, going to win that football game. That's why I think Minnesota's got a chance. They've got a pretty good defense.
Coach, who's more responsible for the Patriots' success? Is it Belichick or is it Brady?
I think it's, first of all, I think the organization is the best. The owner, Bob Kraft, is a tremendous man.
Mm-hmm.
He hired Bill Belichick. Let me tell you a story. Bill Belichick was coaching a special team for the Giants when I was coaching a special team for the Cowboys. So we used to talk a lot. Bill Belichick is outstanding. You know why? He's a decal guy. He pays attention to everything. It's hard to say that I've ever seen a quarterback play any better than Brady.
Is he the greatest of all time in that position, Coach?
I just don't know. I've never seen anybody play. And I've seen a lot of them. I've seen Johnny Unitas. I've seen them all. He is really, really good and smart. And he makes good decisions. And, I don't know athletically what his 40 time is. It doesn't matter. But when he throws that football, he throws that football as well as anybody I've ever seen throw it. I mean it. And I'm not just blowing smoke now because I watch him, and I'm really impressed. I mean, what they've done up there, you got to look at what they've done over the last, Bill's career, last 10 years, 12 years. pretty interesting. That's a great organization.
What do you make of all the talk of Brady's throwing hand? Oh, it's the big news. His throwing hand is hurt. He's sitting out of practice.
Missed practice yesterday. Oh. Didn't speak to the media. I don't know. It's a big game on Sunday.
Is this just all smoke and mirrors?
Come on, man.
Coach.
You know it is.
He's calling it out. Some think it's a mind game. All right, just to throw off their opponent. I don't know how successful
No, they have to report every injury. There's no question. So he's on the injury list. He probably bruised his hand. Believe me, Tom Brady is going to play, and he's going to play well, whether the hand is bruised or anything else.
He can play well with one hand, guys.
You would never deflate footballs, though. Would you, Coach? You'd never do something like that.
Oh, Mark.
But I what?
Deflate footballs?
Deflate footballs, Coach. I mean,
No. You know, I don't really understand that, you know, but it happened. But I know one thing. When the weather is really cold, guys, if the ball was real hard, it's really hard to catch. It's really hard to throw. It's really hard to kick. So I can understand why they did it, but, you know, I would never do that, no.
Quick question about the Bears before we let you go, Coach. You know, a lot of comfort for Bears fans in keeping Vic Fangio as defensive coordinator. You know, what do you think, you know, how important is that move for this team? What do you think moving forward? You know, we have a lot of hope in our quarterback and in what the Bears are going to do here and what they're trying to assemble. What do you see in there?
Well, I agree with everything they've done. I mean, I don't know. They made a decision to change head coaches. I'm sure this guy's a very capable and a very good coach. I don't know because I don't follow it that much. I know it was at Kansas City. They had a pretty darn good offense on Kansas City. But if you look at the Bears, what they do well, they can run the football and they can play pretty darn good defense. Now, that's a pretty good start if you look at everything. I think Mitch is going to be a great quarterback in the league. I think you probably need a couple more weapons to help him out. But he's going to be terrific. So you're asking me, you know, you say, have they won what? They won seven games this year or five? I don't know what they won. But anyways, you say, well, how can you say that? I said, because I see improvement. I see light at the end of the tunnel. It doesn't happen overnight. But when it happens, they catch on to it and they do it very well. But I think as far as I can see, the Bears are going in the right direction. They didn't have a good year. I understand that. But, you know, a lot of teams don't have good years, and they bounce back. I think they got a great chance to bounce back. I think they'll be very very compatible
competitive
with Minnesota, Detroit, Green Bay. I think they can play with those teams. And the main thing in football, you know, you got to win your division. If you can win your division, you're going to the playoffs. And then it becomes a three-game series. It's not bad.
So just to recap, you're saying you think, Coach, it's going to be, depending, you know, all things being equal, you think it's going to be Minnesota and New England in the Super Bowl. When all the dust settles this weekend, those are going to be the last two standing.
Well, you know, I'm never right. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, it is always a pleasure, and we will check in with you again next week.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
You too.
Take care.
Have a good weekend.
Mike Ditka. Come on, man.
That was...
I've
never heard him go, come on, man.
Right, I got a come on, man, from the coach. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was. I like it. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
All right, this is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Brian Noonan here with us on this Friday. A lot coming up. We've got the Gnarble Wagon rolling. We've got a...
Top 5 and 5.
Top 5 and 5, you won't believe. The beatbox saxophonist is here for Live Music Fridays.
Richard Roper is here with some movie reviews.
About to step in and talk to us about what to see and not to see over the weekend. And we also just have... We'd be remiss if we haven't mentioned that Kanye West and Kim Kardashian have named their child another geography-inspired name.
Yay!
This one very close to us. Chicago West is the
At
name.
What age do you then turn on your parents and rain violence down upon them for giving you such a stupid name? Is that like 12 or 16?
He's from Chicago, and
right, but his kid
sentimental to him.
Please, come on.
People
Anna.
Are showing pictures of the highway signs, like Chicago West suburbs and things like that, and saying, oh, he already owns a suburb, or check this out.
So it's actually, it's a baby girl.
Yeah,
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a girl name.
It Chicago. Doesn't seem like anybody's name. It's a city name.
Right.
Who names a kid Chicago?
They were
traffic
also
cone West. What does that not fit on the birth certificate? What kind of idiocy is that?
They were saying that she'll be nicknamed Shy.
Shy's kind of cute. I like Shy. But so they, you can imagine the internet was busted over this when this afternoon Kim Kardashian just put out on.
Thank goodness that the Kardashians are here, because if not, we would be fixated on the fact that there's only 6 hours left before a potential government shutdown. Now, everything's in perspective.
It does put it in perspective.
This government shutdown, not the dumbest thing that's happening today.
No, and so, but the latest on that, we should bring everyone up to speed. I know Judy will have tops in her news, but we've just heard that they are sitting down. There's a bipartisan meeting, and that they may be throwing their support behind a days-long or potentially up to a two-week CR, continuing resolution, just to keep things open until they can agree. Senator Alexander says they're on the 10-yard line, and that is the closest anyone has put this since it began. So we'll see what happens there. We've got Judy's news coming up at the top of the hour in 2 minutes.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, and one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it, I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Thank God Donald Trump's a hulkamaniac. He'll know enough to let go of his materialistic possessions, hang on to the wife and kids, dog paddle with his life all the way to safety. But Donald, if something happens, you run out of gas, and all those little hulkamaniacs run out of gas, just hang on to the largest back in the world, and I'll dog paddle us, backstroke all of us to safety.
Thank God. We need a safe place, don't we?
I don't know where that got added in, but it's enjoyable.
Just don't grab my bandana because I'm bald underneath.
Shh, don't tell nobody.
Yeah, you grab the back of his head.
Yes, you can. Well, we have the Knarble Wagon rolling here on this Friday on the Ron Concha with me.
It has Duplantis. Rolled in huge.
And big time, bigly, as the president likes to say. We've got Brian Noonan here. We've got Richard Roper here. We've got Chef Cletus Friedman, the executive chef of a very exciting addition to our city.
I'm now going by Chicago Friedman.
Oh, I like
that. Yes, I am too.
Very nice. Everybody's like Chicago.
Yeah.
So, wait a minute, real quick.
The Lakefront Restaurant is
sponsored by It's Just Lunch, this particular Knarble Wagon.
Oh, fantastic.
So, Chef Cletus, congratulations.
Thank you.
On this exciting thing, this new restaurant for our city. It's not open for a few months, but we're sort of previewing what you're doing there. Tell us what you're trying to do.
We have kind of what we've been saying is polishing this jewel that's been sitting on a lake, the building Theater on the Lake that was built in 1920. Mm. We've now made it a restaurant, a theater, and an event space. So it's really exciting. We open late October.
Nice.
Serving lunch, dinner, and Saturday and Sunday brunch. So we're kind of kicking it 7 days a week over there right on the lake.
And you describe it as an upscale tavern, which I love. First of all, my dad had a tavern for many years, Clark and Devon. Love the whole tavern idea. And the tavern started to get great food, and then now you've kind of taken it up and up a notch from there.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun with the food and beverage program all around. We're in a really unique situation right there at Fullerton on the lakefront. I always say if you head east on Fullerton, and you've hit the lake in the water, you've gone just a little too far.
And for people who are thinking, well, where am I going to park? You guys have valet. So get that out of the way right away.
That's always a question. Where is the parking?
That's why I brought it up first, because I'm like, people are going to panic.
You know, when we come down here, where do we park? We valet, right? So we take care of that. We always recommend you Uber to us, rideshare over to us.
Right.
Because, lots of options. And at the bar, too, we have so many options. And we encourage those options with our libations.
We can tell.
Well, that's true. Tell us. So let's start on the drinks. I mean,
This is what the kids call getting crunk, isn't it?
Yeah, turnt. We're going to be all turnt.
We're going to be turnt. Yes, we are going to be turnt. I brought you a few things off of our cocktail menu. You have the aviation cocktail, which is in the coupe, with the Death's Door gin. You have what I call the undertow, which is a couple of my favorite things, bourbon and Fernet Branca, bit of citrus. You'll get a little smoke on your nose. We do a little spray with the Ardbeg 10-year.
Is that this one right here?
Yeah, that's that one right there.
Okay, so you got a little bourbon, citrusy
bourbon,
taste.
Honey,
I'm going in.
Citrus, go on in there.
All right, Rich.
That's one of my favorites.
Let's hear your review.
Oh, that's nice.
That is.
I like the very citrusy.
Yeah.
We need a little bit of that.
What is it? What did you say you sprayed in there?
Ardbeg 10-year. It's a scotch. It's a really smoky scotch. So you get it in your nose, but not necessarily in your mouth.
Ardbeg the aroma of it, totally.
That was the original drummer for U2 before they hit it big. Ardbeg 10-year. Ah, you're not going
to
make it.
I knew I've heard that before. Is he at Wrigley? Is he coming to Wrigley this summer?
The opening band.
That's good. That's terrific.
You have two versions of my Bloody Mary here. I do my own Bloody Mary.
Love a good Bloody Mary.
Lots of tomato, lots of horseradish, fresh celery. The tall glass is my award-winning Bloody Mary, which is done with aquavit.
We gotta try that
from North Shore. It's a Scandinavian spirit with essence of caraway, so it's a little more unctuous, a little more savory
and distinctive. And you know, it's definitely a bloody, but with a little bit of a different kind of kick to it.
There's a heaviness,
A little weight to it.
Yeah, weight to it. That's what I'm looking for.
Then the one in the mason jar is made with a Tito's vodka, so it's kind of a straight up Bloody Mary.
Now, where do you fall on garlic? Because this, the first Bloody Mary, very tasteful garnish, piece of cheese, a little sausage, pepper, and a pickle. Where do you fall on the, let's put everything on top of a Bloody Mary?
The whole
sandwich,
deli counter.
A whole
chicken,
the deli, that's just a, that's kind of a departure from focusing on what's in the glass. It's all of it. For me, it's about what's in the glass. Yes, you can have a whole salad. I've seen hamburgers, chicken wings, all that kind of stuff on a skewer. But it's just to draw you away from really what's
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's getting to the point now. It looks like, you know, a Lego building on top of these things. It's all about the photo op. But you want the actual bloody.
Yes.
I feel like the first one on the tall glass, that's kind of the grown-up, you know, you've had your drinks, you've settled into life. The other one with the teal is very good, but that's for the millennials, maybe, you know.
I like the spice on both of them, and I commented on the Bloody Mary mish, a lot of horseradish in there. What was the spirit in the tall one?
Aquavit.
Aquavit.
Yep, it's made up by North Shore Distillery up in Lake Bluff.
Okay. Local.
And when I had City Provisions, they were just coming out. They came out with this spirit that I never really heard of. I tasted it. I make what I call a Scandinavian mule. You know, ginger beer, lime juice, and aquavit. Okay. It's really nice. It's really good just drinking it straight. I describe it like a gin is distilled with juniper as a botanical. Mm. Aquavit is distilled with caraway.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
So, what else would you find that in? I don't think I've ever tasted it before.
I've seen it in stores and on shelves and liquor stores. I don't see it in a lot of restaurants on menus, so it's nice to kind of feature it in the Bloody Mary.
Great now, did taste. You handle the cocktail menu yourself? Because a lot of times the executive chef will do the food, but then somebody else comes in and does the cocktails. You handled both, right?
I'm proud to say I did the food and beverage menu at the Lakefront and Theater on the Lake. I did the cocktails. So as these two Bloody Marys show, I always describe the menu as approachable, but a little whimsical. Okay. There's something for everyone. Something
like yourself.
Much like myself, Richard.
Like Chef Cletus.
Yes. Very approachable, but highly whimsical.
You seem very whimsical.
We get the whimsical part. It's coming through big.
So,
really big.
You know, with the Bloody Mary, you can get it with vodka. We also offer it with gin. We offer it with the Ardbeg Scotch if you want a really nice, big, smoky Bloody Mary. We have it with bourbon. You could do it with mezcal. It's a very versatile mix, being so kind of fresh.
In fact, you have your own mix. It's called Cletus Hedus. Yeah.
Why, thank you for that.
It's delicious.
Now, can we pick that up at the Lakefront Restaurant?
You can pick it up at the Lakefront Restaurant and other retail shops all around the city.
Nice. And so if I pick up a couple bottles of that and I take it home and I don't feel like venturing out on a Sunday, how much your mix to...
That's a great question. The great ratio?
What's a good ratio?
It depends on, you know, a lot of people ask me how many glasses are in a bottle of wine. And if you ask me, the answer is two, right? So
what's the second one for? If I break the first one?
We're trying to figure out how many glasses of wine were in a magnum. And I think the answer was four. I would say a 1-to-3, 1-to-4 ratio would be good. Mm-hmm. But then again, I make my Bloody Marys in a pint glass.
Nice.
As they should be. Right.
What's the point? You're not doing shots. You're having a drink.
Yes, you're having a drink.
You're having a large drink. Let's make a drink.
And with the garnish, I always recommend something kind of briny, like an olive or a pickle or a pepper or a little bit of all of it.
Okay.
A piece of cheese, something creamy to kind of accent the spice. The horseradish is nice as well.
I'm curious about the location, Chef Cletus. Theater on the Lake.
Yes.
Have we had a restaurant there before? I don't recall I've been to theater productions.
You have been to probably a haunted house. You've been to theater productions.
Yes.
Yes. Hopefully you weren't at the clinic in the late 20s, early 30s. But no, it's a brand new, fully remodeled space. It's absolutely stunning. It's what was once surrounded by chicken wire is now all glass. You can go when it's 5 degrees and be nice and warm, eat, drink, and just have fun.
We're stunning views too, I would imagine.
The views are you know, I was telling someone today, it's the place has two different personalities. During the day, it's one thing. You get the lake and you get the brightness, and it's all beautiful. It's the place is lit by the sunlight. You get reflections off the lake. And then at night, the view turns south to the skyline. We have a stunning view of the skyline. People come and they don't leave, which is a very good thing.
You gotta like that.
They stay and they stay and they drink and they eat. So it's a wonderful setting.
Even very for those of us who are from here, you get to see the city from a different spot. It's a great, great location.
And if you want reservations, go to theateronthelake.com.
Yes, you can get them right through our website.
All right, so this, Chef Cletus, stick around. We're going to be back with you in just a moment, but we want to mention again the Carnarvon Wagon today, sponsored by It's Just Lunch. Let's check in with Judy Pilak, find out what's coming up bottom of the hour in the news.
Starting Saturday, Pat Tomasulo of WGN-TV Morning News gets his own comedy show, and Saturday nights in Chicago will never be the same. Man of the People premieres Saturday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
The Carnarvon Wagon is rolling. Chef Cletus Friedman is here. He is the executive chef of the Lakefront Restaurant. You may not know much about it because it's at the Theater on the Lake. Maybe you've been to a production there, but now you've got this wonderful new restaurant to look forward to. We've discuss the drinks with you, and the Bloody Mary is sincerely delicious.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
I think we've all agreed that the one with the
it's like we're not giving that up. Again?
The Aquavit.
Aquavit.
I brought you a couple nibbles too. We have to pass.
We got to talk about the food now too, because you created the menu as well.
I did.
What was your inspiration? What were you setting out to do?
So the John Wren, who owns Lakefront Hospitality Group, wanted, like you said, Anna, an upscale tavern on the lake.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to take all of my influences and put them under one roof. So I describe it as seasonal Midwestern with a French influence as a reflection of the architecture of the building.
Okay.
And I have I'm changing the menu maybe quarterly, seasonally, with doing weekly specials. And much like I was saying earlier, it's approachable yet whimsical. There's something that everyone will recognize and then a little bit of a twist on it. What I have here, being from Baltimore, I love my crab cakes. I brought you one of my crab cakes.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that. Let's bring that on up here. Here we go.
Let me just break it off.
Traditionally, we do it with some saltines. There's a little remoulade sauce on there.
Oh, boy.
I also brought you our burrata.
What is that? It looks lovely.
So burrata is a mozzarella cheese. Mm-hmm. Inside there is mascarpone, heavy cream, what they call stracciatella, the stretched out cheese, wrapped in a harder mozzarella. So you can kind of cut into it and spread it on the bread. Mm-hmm. I do it with what I call a seeded gremolata. So it's parsley, olive oil, garlic, lemon, pumpkin seed, sunflower seed, poppy seed, black and white sesame seed.
Wow.
Little bit of left-hand milk stout and balsamic reduction on top.
What's the difference between left and right-hand balsamic reduction? Is there a huge difference?
It's all about your brain.
Oh, okay.
You can actually drink a right-handed and a left-handed.
I like a double-fisted.
Call that double-fisted stout.
Double-fisted reduction.
The crab cakes are fantastic,
yes,
Chef.
They are.
I mean, wow. Mm. What don't you do?
Thank you.
Wow.
You know,
and the key to a good crab cake, correct me if I'm wrong, is having the crackers on the side, not in the crab cake.
I was just going to say, there are too many people in the Midwest that say this is a Maryland crab cake, only because they're using crab from Maryland,
right?
But then they stuff it with breadcrumbs and
filling.
Yeah,
there's so much stuff in it, you don't even taste
the crab.
It's
all about the crab.
Yeah, right. You don't want a lot of filler in
there. Megan Trainor's.
Hacks, amateurs, rookies.
They don't know what they're doing, those people, whoever they are.
This is the stuff right here.
But we have burgers, we have steaks, chicken, the whole spread, sandwiches, salads, all kinds of things.
What do you think are the favorites, if you had to sort of pick some things right now in terms of your tavern menu, what would you say?
There's so many things that I wanted to bring you, but just don't travel.
So
why don't we just pick up and head
over?
Yeah,
we'll do it. We'll see you at about 7:15.
Since you insist, we'll see you over there.
We get done at 7.
I do something called whiskey bacon, where I take pork belly and I brine it in bourbon for 5 days. Then I take whiskey barrels and bust up the whiskey barrels.
Sold. You had me at bourbon.
Smoke it. Okay, good. So there's that. There's my chicken fried chicken that I seemingly can't ever not do.
What's
people love it.
What's a chicken fried chicken?
It's kind of like chicken fried steak, what you've heard of.
Sure.
Okay, it's a pounded steak, breaded and fried, but instead of steak, it's chicken.
Nice.
And I do an apple sausage gravy on top with Gruyere mashed potatoes and a honey fennel slaw. It's a lot of fun. It's at lunch, it's at dinner, it's at brunch. You put an egg on it and call it brunch.
love that.
Isn't that true? You do. You crack the egg over it, and you're like, oh.
There's your brunch.
Brunch salad with egg.
You've been doing this a long time at different places. When you're opening a new restaurant in a city that's becoming more and more food-centric by the day, what's the challenge to say, all right, this is what I'm going to do to set myself apart? This is how I'm going to make my mark in this market.
The challenge for me is to constantly do new things that excite me and my staff, which in turn excite our guests. So I'm always looking to do new things to kind of put twist on either what I've been doing or what I've been inspired by, always finding new ways to get people to keep coming back, whether for the same thing or they want to try something new. Mm-hmm. It's just it's a great palette now to have this kind of playground in between Diversey Harbor and Fullerton to play on.
So, Chef, is there any legendary attempt that never got out of your kitchen that you still laugh about to this day, or you think about like something you tried that just didn't quite?
You know, when I had City Provisions, Barry Sorkin from Smoke gave me my smoker, which I currently have. That's in the past 8 years, it's been on more than it has been off. And when I got it, every single thing in my kitchen went in that smoker. Now, my smoked hummus is one of the best things to come out, there were a lot of things that were really good.
No, okay. All right.
Yeah, some things don't hold smoke as well.
No, and now I have a dehydrator, so everything in the kitchen is going into the dehydrator.
I have one of those. It's very tempting just
we're
to just
finding
do
out
that.
What's not good.
Do you smoke it first, then dehydrate it, or...
Wait, what are we talking about?
Yeah, let's do
can
it all.
Can you smoke and then dehydrate?
Smoke it. And
yeah, what are we talking about now? No, I think are we in Colorado now?
I think
I was
going to
say, I think we dehydrate it first and then we smoke it.
Okay. Oh,
gosh.
Perfect.
I don't know
Yes, what are we talking about? Okay, Chef Cletus, tell us exactly how people can see you. And it's not just for the theater-going crowd. This is a great place for people to go to enjoy our city skyline during the day, to take in the lakefront.
Everybody. And the most rewarding thing about this whole project has been every single person feels an ownership of this building. Mm-hmm. They run by it. They bike by it. It touches them in some way, and it's so rewarding. But we're right at 2401 North Lakeshore Drive, literally east on Fullerton until you can't go anymore. You'll wind up in our little turnaround.
There you go. Perfect.
TheaterOnTheLake.com is a place
ride
to go.
Your bike. Yep. Take a valet park.
We are on the Facebook, Theater on the Lake Restaurant Events and Theater on social media.
That Facebook thing?
That Facebook
not familiar with
page on the
Chef
Instagram.
Chef Cletus, thank you for
thank
sharing
you guys
with us.
For having me.
Really
please,
appreciate
drink
it.
On. Enjoy.
Yes,
fantastic.
We will.
Get home safely.
We appreciate it. We've got Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes, then a Top 5 at 5 You Won't Believe, Richard Roper's Reviews, and Live Music Fridays coming up. A little bit of the Cranberries there, remembering Dolores O'Riordan.
Yeah, it was a very, very sad story.
It was, in such a young age. Got a text here, 312, Anna Bryan, I don't know if this is WGN radio newsworthy, but coincidentally, I am also shutting down at midnight tonight and will not officially reopen until Monday morning.
Listen,
good
who
for
isn't?
You.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
A good plan.
Good for you.
I'm doing that too. Sounds
I
good.
I might go till 12:05 because I live that kind of wild lifestyle. But you know, why not?
If you're having fun, you can go past midnight.
That's
but,
right, Richard.
You know.
Crazy. I'm crazy.
Madness.
I'm nuts.
Apparently, though, it's getting better and closer to coming to some sort of short-term agreement. Budget Director Mick Mulvaney is saying that we think within the next 24 hours we could have some type of a deal to avert a government shutdown. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Good. You ready?
We have other things to worry about. It's time for...
It's the Top 5 on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four. Three. Two. One.
Now, it's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Stop yelling at me.
Okay.
My goodness.
Checking in at
number 5.
CNN's Jim Acosta participated in the White House press briefing today. And of course, not necessarily, it's very contentious between him and the White House. Has everyone noticed? Sparks flew when he grilled the budget director, Mick Mulvaney, over the president's responsibility for the possibility of a government shutdown.
It seems that the whole process was blown up by the president's comments.
When Republicans tried to add a discussion about Obamacare to the funding process in 2013, we are accused by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer of inserting a non-financial issue into the spending process in order to shut the government down. How is that not exactly what is happening today? There is no reason that you have to deal with DACA this week. There's no reason you have to deal with DACA before the end of the middle of February. DACA doesn't expire till March 5th. This is purely an attempt by the Senate Democrats, led by Mr. Schumer. It's why we call it the Schumer shutdown, in order to try and get a shutdown that they think this president gets blamed for. Yes.
To separate those
very
two,
angry.
Right?
Really?
This is very contentious.
Easy, Mick.
And Mulvaney argued that Trump is trying to prevent a shutdown, whereas Barack Obama allowed the 2013 shutdown to happen, they said. So congressional Republicans would take the blame.
Let's make one thing clear about that. One of the differences between where we are now and where we were in 2013. Right? The president is actively working right now to try to prevent a shutdown. I will contend to you that is dramatically different than what President Obama was doing in 2013. I was there, okay? I was involved heavily in this in 2013, and I will tell you that it's absolutely my belief that President Obama wanted a shutdown in 2013 because he thought Republicans would get blamed. So let's talk about today. The president, as Mark just pointed out, actively worked all day yesterday to try and get a bill through the House and continues conversations today. So there's no way you could lay this at the feet of the President of the United States.
Of course, we can't blame anything on him.
Well, Mulvaney's got the move, though. You see what he does there? He doesn't come up for air, so there's no chance to interrupt him. His periods are commas.
Yes.
So he just moves on to the next thought before anybody can interject. It's a good move.
If you don't pause, nobody can counter.
Railroads his way through the whole thing. It's true.
Very nice. All right, moving on.
Number four
is part of Vice News Tonight's special on President Trump's first year in office, airing tonight on HBO. Republican pollster Frank Luntz spoke to a focus group of Trump supporters.
Did you vote for Trump because of where he stood on the issues or because of his attributes and character traits? I'm just curious.
I voted on the issues.
How many of you voted on the issues? Okay, what were you looking for when you voted for Trump?
Change, I guess.
Did you get the change you were looking for?
Not really.
I did.
You did, clearly.
Jerusalem's the capital of Israel.
What was the change you were looking for when you voted for him?
Just everything to change. Healthcare, everything.
We didn't get healthcare.
Of course. Yes.
Not because of him, we didn't get healthcare. Because of the Congress.
He wanted us to have healthcare.
So you blame Congress?
Absolutely. Yes, for the healthcare I do.
Really? All right. The conversation quickly devolved into yelling at conspiracy accusations. Shocker. Mm-hmm. Much to Luntz's chagrin.
How many of you think that if the election were held today, you would vote for him again? Okay. Why not?
I'm not one of the cult members who thinks everything he does is wonderful. Can I say something? Trump is right. He could literally kill somebody on Fifth Avenue. You still love him.
Hillary's already killed people.
Oh, Hillary's the devil.
You voted for Trump.
I voted for Trump at a protest for Hillary, thinking he was maybe a populist, and boy, was I sold a bill of goods that's just not there.
Well, you think Hillary would have been doing better today at this point?
Hillary wouldn't have embarrassed us in front of the world. Hillary was a horrible candidate.
Would she have had the black unemployment down to where it's at today?
What are you talking about?
Wow.
The Frank Luntz session sounds just like cable news, doesn't it?
I've left that bar so many times. Yes, you know, where everybody knows your name.
Sure, the black unemployment. There's more.
Is it possible that he is contributing to this tonality?
The media.
Is it possible?
Trump can't let his accomplishments speak for themselves. He's far too thin-skinned, and his nasty tweets and his preening are the things that are making the news.
But you voted for him.
Absolutely.
And are you happy with that vote?
I am still happy with that vote. I just wish he would grow up.
Well, then how are you happy with the vote? Plus, I don't like the word preening and thinking of the president at the same time. Picture him in his tidy whities walking around in front of a full-length mirror. What do you think of me now? Nothing?
He's the same person he was.
Exactly.
Change.
Not at all.
It sounds like the Mar-a-Lago event he may not make it.
Unless they
figure this out prior to it.
Oh, gosh.
Supposed to be tomorrow night. Mm. We will see what happens
Number three.
Oscar winner Monique is encouraging her fans to boycott Netflix after she claims The streaming service offered her significantly less than other comedians for a forthcoming comedy special. The 50-year-old actress and longtime stand-up comedian took to Instagram to explain the reason for her boycott.
I was offered a $500,000 deal last week to do a comedy special.
Wow.
However, Amy Schumer was offered $11 million, Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle $20 million. Then Amy Schumer went back and renegotiated $2 more million because she said, I shouldn't get what the men are getting, they're legends. However, I should get more, and Netflix agreed. When we asked Netflix to explain the difference, why the money was so different, they said, well, we believe that's what Monique will bring. We said, well, what about my resume? They said, we don't go off of resumes. Then we asked them, what was it about Amy Schumer? And they said, well, she sold out Madison Square Garden twice, and she had a big movie over the summer. Is that not Amy Schumer's resume? And then Netflix said, by the way, we believe Monique is a legend too. Why shouldn't I get what the legends are getting? Please stand with me in this boycott of Netflix. I love us for real.
Can't do it, Monique.
A few things here. I believe those deals for the other comics are for more than one special. Also, I love Monique. I've known her for a long time. She's great. But
she was
impressive. She won Academy Awards, Best Supporting Actress. But when you start off the I'm getting screwed speech by telling everybody you're getting $500,000 to tell some jokes,
right.
It's going to be tough for people to sympathize with. And the other thing is what they're saying is true. Monique is great. She's a great talent. She's not filling the United Center.
And she's
I don't know if she would fill the Chicago Theater.
Right.
As a stand-up comic, Amy Schumer has sold out major venues, as have obviously the male comedians
Seinfeld
there. So if you look at their resumes, I don't know, man. Look, she should go get whatever she could get. Mm-hmm. But when you say I got offered $500,000, who's standing with me? Well, probably almost no one because they have to work for 10 years to make that money.
Right, and my Netflix bill just went up.
It feels like she's sort of jumping on because there are a lot of women who are pointing out real disparities here. You saw Ellen Pompeo bring up something. She was the title in Grey's Anatomy and was not making as much as Mr. McSteamy or Dreamy or whatever his
name. All the Dreamy Steamies. Yeah.
And then, you know, you got Kat Sadler and so many others, and it just felt like, you know, there's a real point to be made here.
The thing is, and look, in a lot of cases, it's true, but we're not talking about two attorneys who have the exact same experience and are partners in a law firm or things like that. We're talking about careers and resumes, and you know, there's a lot of talking about Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams and how she screwed. You know, well, you know, Mark Wahlberg is a bigger box office draw, and it wasn't his fault to get an extra million and a half.
His agents negotiated.
She had the same agency. She should be looking for new agents.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Right. You just wonder, though, would it matter if she had a different agent? Because it just seems that this disparity is repeated over and over again. I think that's what is healthy to have at the part of the conversation.
Well, the report also was that she volunteered to do it for nothing. So
Michelle Williams.
And was told that all of the actors volunteered to do it for nothing and then found out, no, that's not quite true.
Well, everybody except Wahlberg.
Right. We have one a little
who
more
doesn't work for free?
On Monique, see if it changes your mind from TMZ.
If somebody doesn't pay you what you want, you say, fine, I'll do this somewhere else. And you'll be sorry.
When you say, well, if they just say no, you take it somewhere else. Well, I'm a black woman in Hollywood, Harvey. And why should I have to take it somewhere else when my comedian brothers and sisters have been given these offers based off of their resumes and their tenure in the business? When you look at my resume, I am the most decorated comedian alive. I am the most decorated comedian alive.
But Monique, I gotta stop you. What you're saying is black women are not treated fairly at Netflix.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Harvey. So when I say it's gender bias and it's color bias, because even though Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle are men and they're considered legends, well, when Netflix, Robbie Prohl says Monique is a legend, I'm not disputing what Chris and Dave got. They're deserving of that because those brothers are legends. However, when you put out tenure together, I think Chris may have been in the business maybe 5 years longer than me. I think Dave Chappelle and I started pretty much the same time.
Yeah, but if you walk down the street, and as talented as Monique is, you walk down the street, you ask a random sampling of people, do you know who Chris Rock is? Do you know who Dave Chappelle is? Do you know who Amy Schumer is? Do you know who Monique is?
Yeah.
Monique doesn't have that name recognition.
Nowhere near the reputation. And she's very, very talented.
Sure.
But in terms of what, for this particular gig, look, again, it's not like all of them were on a show like Friends. Remember when all six Friends got the same amount? Because they should have. This is not the same case. This is, you know, we're talking about, dramatic acting. Monique might be better than Chris Rock at that and Chappelle at that. This is getting on a stage and making people laugh and getting eyeballs to Netflix. And they probably would outdraw her 20-1.
Of
That's the reality of it.
The buzz when Chappelle's specials came on Netflix was unbelievable. there's not going to be that same buzz when Monique releases her special on Netflix. It's just not going to happen. And going back to your point, Rich, nobody's crying for somebody getting $500,000.
Yeah, it's hard.
I'm not crying, and I just got a free Bloody Mary.
I don't think we're going to see a lot of the signs in the march tomorrow about Monique. You know,
free march tomorrow. We should write
more money for Monique. I don't think it's going to be a leading sign tomorrow.
I'm going to make that sign just because of
it. I might do that actually. You know, who's with me?
Look at how evolved Richard Roper is.
No, there's going to be a great
standing up for
pub.
Monique.
I'd get some press with that.
We got to take a break here, guys. We're going to be back with more of the top five at five, but we want to check in with Judy Pilak, find out what's coming up top of the hour in the news. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Brian Noonan is here Friday. We've got Richard Roper here this Friday. We're in the middle of the top five, and we are checking in at
number two.
Chris Hemsworth, Michael Pena, and Trevante Rhodes are three of the titular 12 strong in a new movie about a 12-man American military mission in Afghanistan, which Richard will be talking to us about very soon, to get local resistance militias to turn against Osama bin Laden and his Taliban army. For Hemsworth, who you may know as Thor, he plays the team leader, Captain Mitch Nelson. It was a chance to highlight real-life superheroes.
Absolutely, yeah. As you say, I've done a lot of stuff sort of in the comic book world and the fantasy-based sort of heroes and so on, and it was a lot of fun, but desperately wanted to do something with some real heart and something more grounded, and this script came along a few years ago. My first instinct was I was just couldn't believe it was a true story. I knew about this conflict and this war, like a lot of people, but not about this mission.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing
Me
your
too.
Review.
One of the things, I actually think Chris Hemsworth's a pretty good actor, but one of the things I appreciate about him is he doesn't really try to disguise that accent. Even when he's Thor, Thor's Australian.
Sure.
And when he's this American captain who grew up on a ranch in Texas, he still sounds like that. You know, he doesn't really try to disguise the accent, so it's kind of great. And Michael Pena's in there, and of course, he's a Hubbard High School grad.
Oh, gosh.
So we'll have the review for you guys in just a few minutes. So
yeah, because if he had tried to do the accent, he might have turned out like Kevin Costner in Robin Hood.
Yeah,
kind of English.
Almost there.
Yeah.
Well, it's Brian. We talked last week that Liam Neeson has done the same thing. At a certain point in his career, he just told everybody, "Listen, I know I'm going to play an American. Just put in three lines about how I grew up in Ireland," right. And that's what he does in the commuter. He's like, he's an ex New York City cop, and he just gives a speech.
So
one
true.
Point, he goes, "When I came over here from Ireland, I had nothing, and I made myself a police officer within New York City, the finest." And then he just then it's like, okay.
Perfect.
So, because Arnold would never have that. He'd never have his character be Austrian. He'd be a Los Angeles firefighter, and he'd sound like Arnold. And he'd say, you know, I grew up in this country. No!
No, you didn't. Wait a minute. Doesn't make sense. We'll look forward to that review coming up, where we are checking in and at
number one.
Last night, Tucker Carlson brought frequent guest, lifelong Canadian, Mark Stein on Fox News, and watched him trash immigrants.
The white supremacists are American citizens. The illegal immigrants are people who shouldn't be here. And the organizing principle of nation states is that they're organized on behalf of their citizens, whether their citizens are cheerleaders or white supremacists or whatever. You're stuck with them.
Do we even have to justify this guy's crazy thoughts?
What do you say about it? I mean, is this supposed to justify not doing anything with DACA? I mean,
yes, we leave those people alone and we praise the white supremacists. That's
we used to run this clown's column in the Sun Times years ago because he was friends with the owner who was Canadian. And he was Canadian and he kept writing all about all these issues happening in Chicago. And I actually finally wrote a piece saying, "Have you ever been here?"
Great point, Richard. The interview was all around nuts and received some serious blowback, but it doesn't hold a candle to Stein's previous career as a musician. Also, they don't mention the Sun Times here, but musician. Stein has actually created multiple albums. One is Christmas-themed.
Oh, very nice.
Gingerbread and Eggnog, and one, unfortunately, is cat-themed.
Oh, my God.
I thought I saw a pussy cat a-creeping up on me. I did. Whoa. I saw a pussy cat as plain as he could be.
This is like if Mr. Rogers was a pedophile.
Yeah.
It's like wacky. This is,
very creepy.
I don't think
you can't hear it quite the same way.
No, I don't.
Wow.
There's a video that goes with it. If you want to.
Oh, is there a therapist that goes with it, too?
And there's one of those dolls.
There's some issues going on there.
Let's wrap this thing up, guys. We got to get to the news.
The top five at five.
Listening to the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. It's Live Music Fridays, and that is the beatbox saxophonist, Derek Brown. Extremely talented. We're going to hear from him coming up, talk to him, learn a little more about his music.
Yeah, this is
and where you can see him. Cool. He's really
one of the wildest
incredible
things I've ever seen.
You think there's a whole percussion section in the studio right now, and it's all him.
So it's a foot and a board.
It's amazing.
And a saxophone. It's crazy.
But we have Richard Roper here as well, and so we've got to get to the movies going on this weekend and Richard's reviews.
Well, first of all, I would just like to say that I would like to walk down Michigan Avenue with Derek behind me, like as my soundtrack, my personal
here
soundtrack.
I
would look so cool and badass. People like, look at that guy. I would just be kind of like strutting down the street, man. That would be cool.
Was that a Robert Townsend movie where everybody had their own soundtrack?
That's my movie. It's my movie that I'm doing with Derek, okay?
Never mind. All right.
It's my movie.
I'm sorry.
He's taking it first, Brian. You're not allowed to do it now.
No, I'm just saying maybe he, you know, checks the copyrights on it. That's all I'm saying.
There was a Robert Townsend movie?
What?
The last 30 years.
Come on.
All right, what do we got this week? What do we have coming
let's
up?
Let's go way back to Cinescope. Anyway, what do you got?
That's fantastic. Let's start with 12 Strong, guys. We just played a clip from Chris Hemsworth, right, Brian? And it's a fascinating story, guys. This is takes place shortly after 9/11, and a group of just 12 Special Forces soldiers were dropped into just outside of Afghanistan, and then they hooked up with some Afghan troops to invade northern Afghanistan through the rockiest, most unforgiving terrain, and then kind of give the coordinates to the U.S. bombers so they could take out Al-Qaeda. And it's a true story that people didn't know much about because when they came home, there were no medals or parades or at least anything in public because it was a covert operation and they couldn't compromise it. Now it's pretty well known. There was a book about it. And one of the most amazing things is they rode horseback against these terrorist troops who, by the way, the other forces, the Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, they had tanks. They had serious artillery. And on the other side, you had 12 Americans and about 200 against about 50,000. So Chris Hemsworth playing the leader of the company. They're on horseback. They really are. And if you get a chance to go to the site of the World Trade Center, there's a magnificent statue there of a soldier on a horse that's paying tribute to these great warriors. That's the setup. Now, the movie itself, as we mentioned, Chris Hemsworth, who is Thor in the movies, and Michael Pena, Chicago's own, Trevante Rhodes, who was in Moonlight. I mean, it's a terrific cast. Michael Shannon, another Chicago guy.
Great. Mm-hmm.
And here's, we got a little clip here where Hemsworth's character, as you know, the captain, the leader of the group, is explaining the almost folly, the nature of this mission.
We're teaming up with a warlord that we know nothing about. We're not going to be able to tell our enemies from our allies. Every step we take is going to be on a minefield from 100 different wars. No one's ever called in a smart bomb airstrike from a B-52, so anyone who tells you they've done this before or has experience in this is lying, sir. There's no playbook here. We're going to have to write it ourselves.
I briefed 5 potential captains for this mission. About 100 years of military experience between them, but you're the only one that sees it the way it is. I choose you. You and 11 men. Task Force Dagger.
And off they go.
Wow.
As you can tell by the clip there, very intense stuff. I'm not recommending this movie, guys. I'm right on the fence, about 2.5 stars on it. For one thing, it's about 2 hours and 20 minutes long, so it's too slow paced. But my biggest concern or criticism is it just falls into far too many war movie cliches. All of the characters, you know, the guy that rips up his retirement papers and goes on one last mission, the guy who keeps looking at the picture of his wife and kids who are waiting back
home.
That's
never a good sign in a movie.
Yeah, always be careful with that. And even the character of the Afghan general is kind of interesting. But then you get the obligatory little boy from the neighborhood who starts shadowing one of the American soldiers. Boy. And if you don't think there's a scene where he offers some rare American candy and the kid's never had that before. So, you know, that's it kind of ticks off the cliches one by one. So it's very well shot. It's impressive looking. New Mexico, which stands in for everything these days. Yeah. Whether if a movie is set in the Old West, the Middle East, or the future, mm-hmm. it has to be filled in New Mexico. Sure. So they do a pretty good job of kind of, you know, bringing it home. But it's just it's too long, and more troubling is that it just gets too many cliches where the general says things to Chris Hemsworth's character like, you know, there's a difference between a soldier and a warrior. A soldier thinks with his head, and a warrior thinks with his heart, and things like this. Like I'm thinking, I don't think.
But if they have the source material, they have the real people. Why?
Because they're trying to make a mainstream piece of entertainment. It's a Jerry Bruckheimer, you know. A lot of the bombastic thing has his imprint on it.
You should have led with that.
It's got some serious ambitions, but it becomes, you know, a pretty for being 2 hours and 20 minutes long, kind of a paper thin. We don't really, you know, the characters are caricatures, and mm-hmm. we never really get past that. Well, it's a shame. There's a, you know, there's, but it's still, you know, again, it's a nearly good movie about great heroes.
Okay.
It sounds like they deserve better.
2.5.
2.5. Ooh. Okay. Yeah, for 12. Hopefully, there's something better to see this weekend.
Let's talk about Den of Thieves. It's mid-January, so you get a lot of these movies where you're like, okay, now it's time for a heist film. Gerard Butler is in this movie, and O'Shea Jackson Jr., mm-hmm. who of course is the son of Ice Cube. And played Ice Cube in Straight Outta Compton. Terrific actor. Actually, I think he's got a lot of talent. So this is a heist movie set in Los Angeles.
Excuse me, you forgot 50 Cent.
No, 50 Cent is, yes, also in this. Well, we're not listing the entire cast because we have to get off the air.
Brian's disappointed.
No, 50 Cent. 50 is a marquee. I'm sorry, Richard.
He's,
go ahead.
He's in this movie as well.
Does he have
Let's go to IMDb and list all 61 people with speaking
parts. I don't need to see all 61.
And this is another movie with big ambitions. It wants to be a lot like a great film from the 90s called Heat, a Michael Mann film. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of Training Day in it, a little bit of Usual Suspects. It's about an elite group of Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department guys who are, you know, kind of the rogue group of cops. And they're facing off against a bunch of ex-military guys who are now robbing banks in Los Angeles. We got a clip here where Gerard Butler, mm-hmm. as the leader of the cops, is interrogating O'Shea Jackson Jr., who's a member of the bad guy gang.
Do you know what this means? It means I am a member of a clique.
It's kind of like being in a gang.
Sort of like a gang, only we have badges, which means you are done.
He ain't lying.
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Do we look like the types who'll arrest you, put you in handcuffs, drag you down to the station? Hmm? I'm asking you a question.
No, not at all.
Right, exactly. We just shoot you. It's less paperwork.
Ooh. There you go. Two stars for this one, Den of Thieves. Again, you know, it has some pretty cool elements. Another movie that runs on for like 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's a really good, slick, entertaining 90-minute movie, you know, completely overshadowed by a 2.5-hour film. And we once again, we get into a lot of convoluted plot things, and they try to really kind of trick us. And when you put the pieces of the puzzle together at the end of the movie, it doesn't add up at all. I like the acting in this. The action sequences are okay, but it's a pale imitation of much better heist movies. So we're 0 for 2 so far, guys.
Is it just a vanity thing where they could make a really good 90-minute movie, but nobody's telling the director, listen, if you cut this down, it's going to be great.
How many times have you seen that, right? Yeah, you're like, gosh, this kind of should be over by now.
You actually see it in a lot of the superhero movies, and a lot of it, too, is if they're going to spend that much money shooting it, they don't want it to sit in the deleted scenes DVD package. You know, they want it to be on the screen. They want to show as much of the movie as possible. In this case, I don't know, because to me, the studio should have had the control to say to the director, like, you know, we're going to take this. And if they trim 20 minutes from him, you got it. Just, you know, right when it should be kicking into gear for the final heist, it just goes on and on and on. And then, you know, characters who are smart throughout most of the movie have to do something stupid in order for the plot to continue. Right. So you find yourself in the audience going, it's what kind of movie, like, you know, you talk back to the screen. Normally, I do not advocate that. But in this, you know, like, don't go in there. Their way's a trap.
All right, we're going to hang on. No. When we come back, we're going to do the third movie. We have three today. Mom and Dad, right, is the last one.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage's new movie.
That doesn't bode well.
That's coming up. And we have some breaking news about Tom Petty as well. But let's check in with Judy Pilak right now to see what's coming up in her news at the bottom of the hour.
This week on Chicago's Best, move over, the cow is king. It's an all-new Chicago's Best Beef, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. I'm just jamming, Anna.
It sounds
don't mind
so good.
Me.
We're going to tell you more about Derek Brown, the beatbox saxophonist, for Live Music Fridays coming up at the bottom of the hour. But we're still in the middle of Richard Roper's reviews, and we haven't heard much good stuff so far. 12.
I gave
12
thumbs up to Derek.
Yeah, thumbs up.
So
yeah,
that's one recommendation,
the redeeming
right?
part of the review section.
We're but, 1 for 3.
And he has videos, so that's got to count for something, right?
Right, all right.
So, 12, so wait, what are we, we've got 12 Strong, the Special Forces movie, yes. Jerry Bruckheimer. You said 2.5 on that one, Rich, or two?
2.5, correct.
2.5, yes. Den of Thieves, the heist movie. You gave 2, the Gerard Butler 50 Cent movie.
50 Cent, you got to give Curtis his due.
Yeah, that's
I will
stars.
Say this, not too much of a spoiler alert, but so yeah, and 50 is like, he's in his major like weightlifting, you know, badass kind of character, mm-hmm. him and right. his buddies. And there is a scene where his 16-year-old daughter is going to her first dance.
Oh.
And when the date shows up at the door.
Oh.
I'll just leave it at
great
that.
Great scene.
Would you like to meet my father?
No.
Never has a curfew been less in doubt that you know he's going to bring 11:30. How about 11:15, sir?
Yeah. You know? How about we just don't go? We'll just chill here. Exactly. We'll just stay in the living room.
Daddy!
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So it has its moments. There you
all
go.
Right.
Let's talk about one of the craziest movies I've seen, and I've probably seen, 6,000 movies in my movie
that's
reviewing
so
career. It's called Mom and Dad. Mm-hmm. Now, you might think Mom and Dad is a nice little suburban drama or comedy.
Sounds
and it
nice.
Certainly is set in a nice subdivision with Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair playing a couple. They've been married for 20 years and mm-hmm. seem to have a fairly normal life. They've got a teenage daughter. And of course, she's, you know, she's 15, 16. So she's kind of, you know, at that age where they, you know, they sass back to the parents.
Sure.
And then there's a little brother. He's about 9 and he's a good kid, a little rambunctious.
Is he precocious?
A little precocious.
Okay.
And, you know, dad is not exactly thrilled with his career. And mom is kind of, you know, a little resentful that she gave up her career. But, you know, it's basically like almost every, you know, story.
Right.
And that's the first 20 minutes or so of Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
We get to meet the families in this nice little neighborhood. And then one day, the school bell rings, and it turns out that all the parents in the world have been infected with a virus that makes them want to kill their own children.
Oh
wow.
Gosh.
That's
fast.
That
takes an ugly turn.
Yes.
Yeah, this turned ugly really quick.
Very quickly. And they won't go after anybody else, just their own kids. And this movie's done in kind of a drive-in style, like a 70s exploitation film. It's got a little bit of Heathers and films like that in it as well. But it's a flat-out zombie satire, but zombies are Mom and Dad.
Okay.
And
go full zombie, too?
They don't go full zombie, which makes it scarier because they still talk like Mom and Dad.
Oh,
they don't
no.
have crazy eyes. Because, you know, you look at The Walking Dead and, you know, siblings
are
trying to kill each other the minute they become zombies. Or mom will try to kill a daughter once she becomes a zombie. But this is creepier because Mom and Dad still look and sound like Mom and Dad, except for when they're near their kids, they want to kill them. And and the parents start killing the kids all over the neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
In the last hour of the movie, it's Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair as the parents, and the daughter and the son are hiding out, and it becomes a haunted house, you know, monster movie. And Nicolas Cage in this scene, there's a tool called the Saws All. Have you heard of that tool?
It's
Saws All. That's the whole idea of it.
It's a saw.
Is it one of those as seen on TV things?
No, it's you hold it to kind of like this, and the blade, it's a reciprocating saw.
Yeah.
Blade
so, it, you know, it basically, it saws all. Well, saws I don't know
all.
If this is the best product placement
oh,
or the worst, because Nicolas Cage just keeps going, it saws all. So he's sort of like Nicholson in The Shining, like going after the kids.
That is
going
to freak me out.
So here is a scene where the kids have barricaded themselves in the basement, and with the help of a sledgehammer and the saws all, here comes Daddy Nick Cage.
Put your right foot in, you take your right foot out, you do the hook, you hold in, you
yes, it's mommy, mommy's here. Are you two all right? We're not coming out, okay? You have to leave.
You're going to open the door.
What happened in
Saws All?
So I should take my 6-year-old to this.
Yes. Well, you know, I'll tell you this. First of all,
it's a cautionary tale. Kids will behave.
I will tell you this. I think there are a lot of parents that would like to take slightly older kids to this movie and say, listen.
Right.
Okay.
This could happen.
So, you
pick up a Saws All.
I got to tell
home.
You, in its own way, this movie's fantastic because it's. I'm recommending it for what it is. It's a drive-in exploitation movie.
All right.
Not to be taken literally at any moment. And yeah, please don't take the kids to this. But, you know, what a perfect role for Nicolas Cage to go full operatic playing a dad who, you know, he keeps thinking about back in the day, and he had his Trans Am, and he was spinning donuts, sure. And he was the golden boy, and now he's like, he does this great monologue about how he did not expect to be at this point in his life, and that's before the virus infects him.
Oh man!
But the scenes in that house, man, they're brutal and bloody and dark and grisly, and the kids are fantastic because they're pretty resourceful.
How old are they again?
They're like 15 and 9, okay. I would say.
Okay.
Wow. But and Selma Blair, who's just such a wonderful actress and a sweet person on and off camera, and it's kind of great to see her, you know, because she flips into killer mode too. Okay. And then you got to consider one thing too. If your parents and you're in your 40s and you want to take out your kids, what about your parents who are in their 70s?
Right, aren't they coming after
you? So just might be careful before you answer the door if grandma and grandpa are there too. So,
oh my gosh.
It really does. It has the look. You know, when I was growing up, you guys remember the drive-in theaters. There aren't that many now. Uh-huh. But like when I was growing up in the South Suburbs, there was the pretty nice drive-in theater. And then there was the drive-in theater where everybody smuggled in their friends in the trunk of the car, smuggled in the beers in the trunk of the car. And you'd get a couple of fights at the food stand. This would play at that drive-in theater. So 3 stars for mom and dad.
Are you kidding?
But you got to know what you're getting into. And Nicky Cage, God bless him. You know,
yeah. What's going on with him?
He's got 15 houses and he had some tax problems. And, you know, he's earning. He's got 6 movies coming out this year. He had six movies coming out last year.
He has no problem getting worse.
You know what, though? The thing about him, I always say this, is like, you know, you see there's certain actors who are in a lot of these straight-to-video type movies. Right. Bruce Willis is doing a lot of them. Keanu does a lot. John Cusack has been doing a lot. The one thing about Nicolas Cage is he never phones it in. He never phones in his performances, man. It could be Ghost Rider 7 or Mom and Dad. He's never just with one eye on the page. He's going to give you the full Nicolas Cage. You're going to get your money's worth out of it. And I give him credit for that.
So the cast is great in this overall. You're
saying, they really
the
are.
The acting's awesome.
Yeah.
Three stars. Do we know anything about the stock of Sawzall? Has it risen since the
movie's released? I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. I went out and got one.
Oh, sure you did.
How do you guys
I have no kids, so don't put an APB on me, guys. Don't worry, man.
It's Sawzall.
There's nothing, Brian knows this, there's nothing like a tool that tells you what it does.
Exactly. I don't have to guess.
Hand me the Sawzall.
Is this going to cut through the wood? Yes. Will it cut through the steel beam?
You wouldn't believe the stuff it cuts through.
And it does. It's one of those things. It really does.
It's a beautiful, beautiful tool.
Well, I learned something. I just always think of people murdering their children when I see it.
You ever wonder what it would look like for a coat hanger to go in one cheek and out the next? This is your movie.
3 stars for Mom and Dad.
Sorry for those of you having a lovely Friday evening snack on your way home.
Yes. That's a
or problem. Hanging up your coat.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Richard Roper.
Thanks,
we
Rich.
Will be back in 2 minutes with Judy's News.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gonna stay. Cause ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And the South just ain't no home.
You're listening to the sound of Derek Brown, the beatbox saxophonist. It's Live Music Fridays. He's here in studio with us, and he's a crazy talented musician with such a unique sound. Derek, thank you for being here.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about how this whole sound evolved. You don't hear a beatbox saxophonist much, and what you're doing is really special and cool and awesome.
Yeah, the number one question I get asked is, when did you think to combine beatboxing and saxophone?
Right.
And the dirty little secret, if you promise not to tell anyone.
Well, nobody, just us.
Okay, good. Is that I actually don't beatbox like with my voice.
Oh.
Really, it was just I heard a certain sax player play this sound and thought, oh, that kind of sounds like a drum. So maybe. And then I remember hearing another sax player make this sound. And thinking, oh, that kind of sounds like a slap
bass. Oh,
that's
cool.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Totally does.
And then listening to particularly the great Bobby McFerrin,
vocalist, sure. Don't worry.
And how he combined, you know, just with one voice, he does these giant leaps and does melodies and basses. Uh-huh. And so that got me thinking, oh, maybe I can jump around and play, you know, melody and bass.
Amazing.
And then I thought, that's maybe wild. I could use some rings and my feet. You know, my feet aren't doing anything. And
so, what's the craziest thing you figured out? Because you've obviously figured out more and more and more. Like with the
what's the latest thing?
Yeah, the latest or just
the
unusual
latest
thing.
Been the stomping, where mm-hmm. I was just like, I'm being lazy. My feet aren't doing anything.
Yeah, you got to get everything involved.
And honestly, it's only my left foot right now. So, you know, still people got room. Are like, what's up, Derek? You know,
are you going to get a tambourine or something on your right foot? A cymbal? Anything to kick in?
Though that's the one thing I'm afraid of turning into is that like stereotypical one-man band. Cymbals between the knees.
Right here on the Ed Sullivan Show. Exactly.
Playing a stump fiddle.
But for people, for everybody in your cars or listening at home or wherever you're at right now, I mean, this is just Derek and a saxophone and a little piece of wood. It sounds like there might be four people behind it. It's just him.
It sounds like a whole percussion section is right here behind you, but it's only you. So you're from Michigan, but you're in Chicago now. You're a Chicagoan now.
Yep, last 3 years.
Now you spent some time in Abilene, but you travel extensively, and people love you. I mean, all over the world you're going. You're telling us Russia, China.
You just got back from a huge tour of Russia, right?
Yeah, I did 24 gigs in 24 days throughout all of Russia.
And I think
what an experience.
You uttered a sentence before that no one has ever said before or probably since.
What was that
about your Russian booking agent?
Oh, I mean, he's amazing. Yeah. He's a fantastic.
You said, I have an amazing Russian booking agent.
I have one, would have been the first thing that
I have an amazing Russian booking agent.
How'd you get a Russian booking agent?
Yeah, how does that happen?
How did you get a Yuri?
You know, the whole independent self-promoting musician thing, a couple years ago, I just sent out literally thousands of emails to every festival, every booking agent.
Good for
you.
And, you
know, like,
wow.
0.01% response, mm-hmm. and he was one of the 0.01% and said, hey, I don't do this festival anymore, but you might be a good act. You know, I do some shows on the road, and you seem like you'd be pretty easy to travel.
Yeah.
Just you and yourself.
It's all
you. Low overhead, just you. Yeah.
Yeah. So taking the night train in Siberia by myself.
Wow. I got to ask you, Derek. Okay, so 24 venues. Talk a little bit, if you can, about like the crowds, the audiences there. Because almost everything we see of Russia is kind of filtered through what Russia wants us to see.
Well, so I love the Russian audiences because I think particularly the farther east you go in Russia, it's a little bit more rare, you know, that like particularly Americans are going there. Mm-hmm. And so in some of these towns deep in Siberia, it's like, whoa, there's a concert and it's an American. Let's bring the whole family.
Wow.
And
they fill that's up big
this,
deal.
This like cool. Philharmonic hall. Just for a solo saxophone concert.
Amazing.
It's pretty unreal.
That is
it's
wild.
Like
cool.
Dreams come true kind of stuff.
Oh, and they appreciate it. They're demonstrative when you're on.
Yeah,
and when you're done.
And you know, I work really hard to kind of come up with like creative things in my show. That's why I do, you know, the singing. I have lots of comedy thing, and I try to interact with the audience to keep it exciting for everybody.
Well, and is there a barrier? Like, you may do shows here, and you can do this. Is there a different kind of barrier when you're... Are you fluent in Russian? How do you make that translation?
But I did learn pick up a little bit of Russian, and it's so amazing how, you know, they clap after my first song, and I just say the simple "spasiba," thank you in Russian, and they just clap even louder.
They appreciate that you made it.
Exactly. And I'm thinking in my head, oh, just wait, I've got like five more Russian sentences.
You're building up. You got something big.
Smart though.
Beautiful.
So what have you been surprised by as you travel everywhere and you do this unique sort of music that might be more familiar to people here, both beatbox and saxophone, but overseas potentially it's not you don't hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it does, that cliche of music is the international language, it does hold pretty true, and especially today with the internet, you know, everybody, I do a lot of cover songs, everybody knows Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone,
nice.
You know, things like that, and you know, a lot of the language things, I can be pretty physical, and I try to convey things that way. You know, it's amazing what you can get. It feels pretty similar kind of wherever I go, honestly.
And as you said, they're so happy to see you, and it's so unusual that you've got that first step covered anyway.
Yeah. And it's funny, like a lot of times the comments afterwards, before mentioning like, oh, it was so musical, it was just, you know, is like, whoa, energy. Whoa, I was like,
how does he do that?
So hard watching you, and like the amount of water you drank on stage. Holy cow. So,
cool.
So, how'd you start with the saxophone? What was the impetus for that?
Funny story. I got to middle school when it was like school band time, and I did not want to play an instrument. And I fought my parents, and they said, Derek, you have to pick an instrument. You know, they knew the value of music education.
Cool.
Sure.
And I looked at all the instruments, and I saw the really shiny saxophone, all the keys, and thought, that looks really expensive. Okay, if you're going to make me play, I'm going to pick that one.
Oh, man.
Buy me that. And then now, of course, that's what I do.
It's cool. So
and what kind of sax is it? Not the brand, but is that an alto? What kind of sax is it?
A tenor sax. Tenor sax. And if you could see it at home, it looks like it's like 50 years old.
It does. It looks antique.
Only, it's beat up. Pretty brand new, 3 years old. I just beat this thing up. Some songs, I'm striking it. I'm bouncing it on the floor.
Oh.
I stick things in the bell, egg shaker. I just do lots of things.
And I'm sure purists would look at you and go, oh my God, what are you doing to that instrument?
Exactly. Yeah. When I demonstrate a little bit of, you know, just hitting the instrument, I can just feel the pain of that.
If it were a Pixar movie, yes. Chris Rock would voice your saxophone.
Yes.
Ow! Yeah. Be a lot of that.
Cut it out. That's amazing. So we heard a little bit of Ain't No Sunshine. You recorded that in Gary?
Gary, Indiana.
What makes anyone go to Gary with their saxophone?
Well, I love for... So I have all these YouTube videos, and I love kind of thinking about the atmosphere, not just the visual, not just the sound, but the atmosphere, the whole thing, and some of these, just these grand spaces, just, oh my gosh, it's so exciting to play in a big hall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of have this theme of going to these abandoned buildings and playing, and it kind of fits the image, you know, beatbox sax, I'm wearing a hoodie, yeah, it looks like I just broke
totally
in there,
works.
And I'm just... The truth is, I actually paid like a film permit to go there.
Oh, wow.
That was to get my wife there. She wouldn't...
Oh, right.
Yeah,
otherwise.
She's not going to guerrilla marketing your crazy move to Gary.
But yeah, it's kind of funny, the kind of themes that I have in my video. There's also a thing where if you watch the ends of all my videos, the first video I ever did, I did kind of like a goofy runoff because I was just excited, like, I'm done, woo, yeah. And I hopped off. And then people started leaving comments like, dude, stay around to the end of the video. It's awesome. It's like funny. What? And I'm like, that's kind of a good thing for people to be saying.
Yeah.
Stick around to the end. So nice. Now at the end of
smart.
All my videos, I do some corny little
that's
running
hilarious.
Off or something. Yeah.
Derek, will you do another song for us here?
I
will. What do you have? What do you want to do?
This is going to be an original tune I call Empathique.
Ooh.
And it has
Ooh.
Kind of a scary beginning. So watch out. Thank you.
talented.
Very
You're listening
nice.
To Derek Brown sax and on sax. And you can go to his website, derekbrownsax.com, the beatbox saxophonist. He's also on Facebook and YouTube, of course. You talk about those videos. Now we got to go see them
yeah,
at some
definitely.
Point.
Yeah, definitely.
So check it out. But do you have a few minutes? You can stick around with us here, Derek, because we're going to break to find out what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news with Rob Martier. This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Brian Noonan is here on this Friday, and it's Live Music Fridays, and I'm so happy it is because Derek Brown is
this is amazing.
Such a talent.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like this before. You're incredible what you do, and thank you for sharing it with us.
Yeah.
We have our listeners already saying, where can I get your music? Where do you find it?
At my website, derekbrownsax.com, or on iTunes, Amazon. And then, of course, there's lots
of videos on YouTube at Beatbox Sax. Check that out. And Derek Brown Saxophone on Facebook.
You see the people on Michigan Avenue kind of bopping as they walk by the studio. Like, all right, this is taking me home.
You hear the saxophone, you go, oh, a saxophone player, it's that's cool. And then you start hearing the other stuff that's going with it, and you see Derek flailing around with all his energy.
Because
this
is all him.
Yes.
Every sound you hear is done by him. It's amazing.
Very nice.
You were going to play Stand By Me for us, which we heard you warming up, and is, my gosh, good. So
Yeah, this is my most popular one by far on YouTube. So it's kind of my calling card song. So I got
to do it.
Got to play that one.
All right. When the night has come, when the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. Singing, darling, darling, stand by me. Whoa, stand by me. Just stand by me. Stand by me. I won't cry, I won't cry, no, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me, singing, darling, darling, stand by me, just stand by me, just stand by me, stand by me.
Woo! Thank you,
Derek.
Very
nice.
So good.
Very nice.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You're amazing. Where can people see you here, though? Because I know you play in a local band as well.
Yeah,
where you appear more
regularly. A band, a jazz rock fusion group, Low Spark. We play at a live one every Thursday nights. Thursday night in Lincoln Park, 10:30 p.m. You got to be up for
okay.
a late night.
Yeah.
And then my solo show, I do a lot more international traveling and around the U.S., but occasionally things will come up.
Mm-hmm. So people need to go to Russia or Finland or somewhere exotic to follow you around. Like Deadheads, only they're Derek heads, and they can follow you globally.
Exactly.
All right, yes. I like that.
Gotta
I like
start that. Get that started, Brian. Where would be the dream place here, do you think, that you'd love to play?
Oh,
solo.
Other than the Allstate Showcase Studio.
I mean, would you be more like a Green Mill guy? Would you like House of Blues?
I do love jazz clubs. Oh my gosh, House of Blues would be great. Even like something like the old Town School of Folk Music.
Oh yeah,
like,
that I love
kind
that
of
place.
A venue. That
Got
kind
it.
Of medium Very cool. hall size is like perfect. For
well,
this.
You are awesome, Derek, and thank yes. you again for sharing your talent with us. DerekBrownSax.com is the place to go. You can find links to buying your music
exactly.
there. I assume
and my videos there. Yeah.
And your videos on YouTube.
Beatbox Sax on YouTube. Derek Brown Saxophone on Facebook. Phenomenal, man. Thanks very
so
much for coming
for
in. That
me.
Was terrific.
Rob Bortier's got the news in 2 minutes, and then Justin Kaufman is telling us what's coming up on The Download.